Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning across all these many time zones. Tahiti, Hawaii, in the west, the Caribbean, the newly threatened Caribbean, in the east, the U.S. Virgins. I don't know. It's a rough hurricane season, folks. South into South America, north to the pole, we think. This is Coast to Coast AM. Live talk radio. Unscreened talk radio. Unpredictable. Unusual. Even at times, a little weird. But fun. Definitely fun. And that is part of my plan on radio, to have fun. Can't have fun, you ought not be doing it. And tonight I would like to welcome WHEPAM in Foley, Alabama, scorching into Mobile and Pensacola, Mobile, Alabama, and Pensacola, Florida. They will be carrying the program from, well, let me see. I guess they carried, well, I don't know. It doesn't say here. We'll have to ask somebody there. Looks like total carriage, though, and Dreamland as well. So, welcome to the program. Good to have you. And then also, that'd be affiliate number 110, incidentally. 111 would be KYLR-AM in Huntsville, Texas. That's KYLR-AM in Huntsville, Texas. I'm not exactly sure where Huntsville is. I'm sure we'll be told. Now, I have a number of major announcements tonight. The first major announcement is, beginning as of this moment, and until we reach the number 1,000, which will occur very quickly, my book is out. It's called The Art of Talk. In my book, I cover my long, unusual career in radio. I talk specifically into at great length about this program and behind the scenes of talk radio. It is an autobiographical kind of thing, and you'll see pictures of me as a... You know, one of the photos they put in there, I look like the most angry little tyke that anybody's ever seen. At any rate, it's a wonderful book. The book is a hardcover book. It has had custom artwork, no pun intended, done for the cover. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The book quality is first rate. The page, the print, and the color photographs are all done in gloss. I mean, this is the whole project, as you know, has been ongoing for many, many months now. And so here it is. Here's the offer. And this, believe me, is only going to go to the first 1,000 people, because I'm not signing any more than that. But the first 1,000 people who order, and we have no telephone number for you to order, I'm going to give you an address. And you need to send a check or money order for $24.95 each, you know, for each book you would like, plus $4 shipping and handling. You know, I ought to just add that and make it $28.95. It's a lot easier so that people don't have to do the arithmetic. It's $28.95, and that includes shipping and handling. So that'll make it easier. Now, this is just an offering to some of you who want the book right away and want an autographed copy of the book. Otherwise, not to worry. There will be a 800 number available for credit card purchases sometime after October 6th. This is just a very special sort of first group offering, all right? Only the first 1,000. And so speed, obviously, is of the essence. And if, in other words, if you become 1,000 in one or two or three, and it's going to go very quickly, through 1,000, obviously, you're not going to get an autographed copy. So I'm going to be stressing this tonight. Now, I want to read you something because I'm going to do something a little different here in a moment, maybe. I got, thank God for the internet, I got a very interesting fax from a fellow named Stan Dale, I think it's Dale, all the way down in Perth, Australia. That's the thing about the internet, it's everywhere. And here's what he said. Art, my home is too far away to receive your program. I'm in Perth, Australia. But my brother in Tacoma, Washington, speaks very highly of your show and your methods of exploring the data you encounter. I was recruited by Edward Teller's man, Dr. James R. Maxfield, in Dallas in 1971. This took me to Australia to continue my research into advanced propulsion systems for aircraft and spacecraft. Not long into the program, I disagreed violently with the cover-up of our findings and developments, which I knew could have greatly benefited mankind. I was not at Roswell. I have never seen an alien, to my knowledge. However, I have been involved in advanced research projects which would explain a lot of the so-called UFOs around the planet. We've had over 50 R&D programs, black, since the mid-50s that were set up to make circular winged aircraft and spacecraft. The former worked on ionized plasmas of CO2 seeded nitrogen envelopes in dynamic motion around and through the core of a disc-shaped craft. The latter used a form of pulsed toroidal magnetic fields to move the craft in space, water, or air. I have seen the inside of one of our own toroidal craft in an assembly area in the desert. There have been numerous test areas that operated under NATO banners and others. One was in Saudi Arabia and was called, and I can't make out the name of it, west of the Persian Gulf and in Bahrain as well. I've always known enough to be dangerous to the several factions involved in the use and cover-up of the technology and the alien scenario. Fortunately, someone in these factions has spared me. A bit in exile here in the most remote city on Earth. I do not know how much more I can contribute to the revelation of the truth in these matters, which seem to occupy a great deal of the human consciousness in the Western world of late. I was a cadet at the USAF Academy in Colorado. Class of 67. I held both secret and top secret security clearances for our government. There I was involved in a most unique mind training program, which is still classified above top secret. Believe me when I tell you that I encourage you in your search for the truth in these matters. But I also caution you to ask yourself, what will you do when you find out? Will you like the answer? Will you wish you had not found out? I sometimes wonder what it would be like to live life in a sort of oblivious, lemming-like pursuit of worldly stimuli, not knowing what to do, not having seen the things I have seen, things which I cannot prove anymore, but things which are so bizarre that I marvel they have not leaked out in all this hype about the aliens in Area 51. No one seems to have realized the real UFO research areas are not accessible by laypersons. They're under lakes, under bodies, and under the planet's poles in underground facilities. Some are here in Australia, in the middle of nowhere, at Pine Gap, underground, and in South Africa. But the most sensitive ones are at the South Pole. Teller's group used to control most of these until another faction grabbed control of the international groups. Now, I found this to be fascinating, and so, you know me, I picked up the telephone and called Australia. That's right, I called Australia. And in a moment, I'm going to try to pick up the phone and call Australia again. No guarantees. But I'm going to see if I can get Stan on the air for a little bit here and talk to us about what he knows. What has banished him to Perth in the land down under? Well, there's nothing like going to the other side of the world, and I think that I have connected with Stan. So let us give it a shot, and to the land down under we go, Perth, Australia. And to Stan, is it Stan Deo? Is it Deo, Stan, or how do we pronounce your last name?
That's correct, Art. Thank you very much.
Wonderful, and welcome to the program. Stan, I found the facts, the piece of email that you sent me across this wonderful internet we've got fascinating. And so I want to ask you in person for the audience a little bit of some of what is contained in the facts. I mean, it is absolutely incredible. First of all, how did you become involved with these kinds of aircraft, with these kinds of spacecraft, with this kind of research? What were you doing that got you involved?
Well, first of all, I went to the Air Force Academy as a cadet, and while I was at the Academy, I was inducted into a Black Project, I suppose would be the best word to use, an intelligence project, which did teach me a lot of physics that is not mainline stuff. When I left the Academy, I went back to Dallas, Texas, where I was raised, and a few years passed, and I did private research in developing a new kind of propulsion for aircraft that would, in essence, make a circular-winged flying disc using a plasma, a moving plasma over the surface of the wing.
All right, Stan, you're going to get ahead of me. Now, we've got to reduce this down to what the average person can understand. I'm a little technically minded, but when you begin talking about new propulsion systems, explain to a layman how that might work.
Well, most aircraft have to race down a runway until they can get the relative airspeed up to the point that it lifts the craft off the ground, reducing the pressure over the top of the wing.
Right.
These kind of craft that I was designing did not have to have a runway. They were like a vertical takeoff device that would whirl the air around them in a vortex out the center and around and underneath. And like a bumblebee, they would then lift into the air and fly by pulling a vacuum in front of them. They never pushed their way through the air. They could go very fast, somewhat like a smoke ring at 20,000 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. Can you tell us where this research took place?
Well, what I was doing was in my own my private lab at home, a lot of mathematics and some electronics tests. I never really figured out how they knew exactly what I was doing, but Teller and Maxfield's people from Lawrence Livermore approached me privately and knew everything I was doing. They had been there and done that in the mid-50s, a long time before me. So,
all right. How did that, as they approached you, on what basis did they take you way down to Australia?
Well, Dr. Maxfield's exact words are something to the effect of, my boy, don't ask now, just understand that Australia is the place for you to finish your research, not here. We're going to make everything available for you there and send you down there, which they did do.
Mm-hmm.
Look, they had over 50 projects like this since the mid-50s in the United States, or at least started there. Some had moved offshore down to the South Pole and into Australia, apparently in near the center of Australia. I did not know about those until they told me. I didn't even know they existed until these guys, collared me. I still don't to this day know how they found out what I was doing.
You say here, I was not at Roswell. I've never seen an alien, to my knowledge. Now,
yep.
The craft that you're describing, that you say that we have, are exactly the craft that are being seen all over the world and are being called, frankly, flying saucers. Would it be your contention or belief that most, if not all of these, belong to us?
Let me divide it this way. Before 1952, I don't believe that any of the sightings or contacts were ours or were man-made. After that, yes, a great deal of them. But in 1958, worldwide research in over 100 companies and universities across the planet working in those propulsion systems and publishing them, I'd add, in the trade journals, electronics journals, and aerodynamics journals, stopped. Stopped publishing in the same month all across the world as though some invisible hand had put a muzzle on them, not just the U.S. government. It went across national boundaries. And after that, public information was about zilch on electrogravitic propulsion or anti-gravity.
All right. Is that what it is, Stan? Is it actually anti-gravity? And I guess I've got to have you explain it again. If it's anti-gravity, can you explain how it works? Can you, again, remember, we're just poor lay people.
All right. Two things. When I first started this, I was designing an aircraft which used air that had been slightly heated in temperature, heated a lot, and had electric current running through it over the top of the saucer shape, and this caused the air to move in a tight pattern around the craft and up to the core and swirl like a bumblebee. It's like instead of having a propeller, you have electrons moving the air around the craft. Now, that's an aircraft. Later developments, or in fact, the earlier developments, I didn't know about the time, in the U.S. research, had developed some very complex toroidal coils, ring-shaped, smoke ring-shaped flat coils. They look somewhat like the Pharaoh's headband, if you can remember that, where they've got the little stripes running around the headband of the Pharaoh's little ring that he used to wear on his head.
Yes.
Anyway, these craft did use a very complex interactive pulse electric current and magnetic field, and they generated an effect that would, in effect, bend gravity. Now, I didn't develop those. I came along afterwards. I did see photographs and had it explained to me in the assembly area. But basically what happens is they can use a very small power source and pulse it at the frequency that is just right for the circuit they've designed in the craft, and it will store up energy in the form of moving magnetic fields and current, which switches from one circuit to another at right angles.
You know, Stan, I've got to stop you here for a second. You know what you're describing sounds remarkably like what was described to me in simpler technical terms with regard to that old famous Philadelphia experiment. I've, of course, interviewed Al Bielek many times. And what he talked about is fairly close to what I seem to be getting from you.
Did Al say that, did he?
Well, something close to it. In other words, pulsing magnetic fields with RF, rotating RF fields at a certain frequency. Does that sound familiar?
Yep. Very close. I am familiar with the Philadelphia experiment.
So then the technology that you heard used there is close to what you are describing now.
Yes. As I said to you in the letter, Dr. Frederick Tatford, Atomic Energy Commission in London, contacted me a couple years back. He was a friend of Einstein, and he and Dr. Einstein had discussed the Philadelphia experiment and implications of it. And he was dead by that time, but then Dr. Tatford said to me, I would like for you to explain to me what you think happened, and I will, within the boundaries of what I'm allowed to tell you, confirm it, which I did do, and he confirmed that I had understood the process correctly.
All right, Stan, we have a great echo, of course, and a great time difference and a great geographic difference, so I'm going to ask you to hold on. We're here at the bottom of the hour. There will be 4 minutes of silence. Don't let it bother you. Just stay right where you are, which happens, by the way, everybody, to be Perth, Australia.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
Thank you.
listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
Here I am. My guest is Stan Deo. He's in Perth, Australia. He's there for a very good reason. We'll explore that in a moment. Now, back to Perth, Australia. And Stan Deo. Stan, are we still connected?
Yes, Art. I don't have any echo on my side. Do you on your side?
Only occasionally. It's actually a better connection, Stan, than I get sometimes with Las Vegas. So it's a good connection. There is a little bit of a delay. That's not a big problem. Now,
you know, we are the most remote city on Earth.
Is that true?
That's true.
What time is it there, by the way?
It's 2:37 in the afternoon on Friday, and I can tell you it's sunny. You'll have a good Friday.
Well, if the weather patterns hold. Listen, now, how many years did you work on these kind of craft?
In the States, probably about three or four. I guess I did work on them from about 68, 69 to 71 when they sent me down to Australia. And I made contact with my intelligence group down here.
Would it be your view that the technology in the Philadelphia experiment was the genesis of what led toward the kind of work you did?
If not, it was certainly a main part of it, because there were other offshoots to propulsion. There's a way to convert just heat energy from the surrounding environment using something similar in a pumped action like that. So a lot of things came out of the Philadelphia-type research.
All right. Well, I have always thought that it would be impossible, even if everything about the Philadelphia experiment were true and men caught between decks and all the horrible things that we heard about, that they would just drop the technology and quit investigating. That seemed impossible. And what you're telling us is they didn't.
That's correct.
So you're kind of like where the Philadelphia experiment went. I guess I would think of you that way. Now, we've got these craft and they're flying about. Why has this technology not yet been made available? Because, my God, it would be a power source. It would be all kinds of things that would benefit mankind. Why don't we know about it except from you?
Well, Art, you sound kind of like I did back in 1973 or 74 down here when I really got cranky with the fellows that I work for here in that area, because I said to them the very same thing. Why aren't we sharing this? There are people that need this technology just to survive. Hundreds of millions of people need it. And they kind of told me that I didn't understand the situation about the factions, the groups that are vying for control of the entire planet. And that they couldn't just release this because it would create havoc and precipitate wars. I didn't buy it, and that's where we parted company in very unfriendly terms. I wanted to make it public, which I have certainly started doing, and they didn't.
Well, you are, and I should tell the audience, an author. You have written something called The Cosmic Conspiracy and The Vindicator Scrolls. What are those books?
Well, the first book I wrote 18 years ago as kind of life insurance. I name names, and they've never, ever come back on me. I've talked about Teller, Maxfield, Sir John Williams, a lot of them that were involved in my particular intelligence group in the cover-up. And I wrote that book so that they would know that I was prepared to tell that much and would go further if they didn't get off my back. And so we came to a stalemate for 18 years. Now a lot of those guys are not even in power anymore, or if they are, they're not quite as strong as they used to be. And so I think it's probably time to say more.
Well, okay, I would like you to be able to use your own words and tell us what you know exists and where it is. In other words, tell us as much as you can, and would you view yourself as putting yourself in danger right now by doing this?
No more than going into traffic in New York City at rush hour.
Is that because you're in Perth, Australia, and not here?
No. Believe me, there's no way you run from some of the crowds if they want to get you. It's because there are factions, fighting factions, and some of them are covering me at the moment, that I'm quite unassailed by all this. Where to start? Well, let me put it this way. We we have technology to make and have made flying saucers. That's the simplest way to say it. They are saucer-shaped. Some of them are triangular with kind of rounded corners. The Aurora projects that everyone thinks are so secret and wonderful are nifty, but they are 10 to 12 years out of date. Certainly, you couldn't possibly believe that they would let something like that leak out like this unless it were out of date. I mean, even the model makers are selling models of the Aurora secret craft. But they used portions of technology that were used a long time ago in building the first saucer craft. And the portions are like high voltage charges on the fuel stream and on the wings, up over definitely up over 20,000 volts, and in some cases probably point voltages of 15 million. But and they used barium titanate shields on them. These things are old technology. The newer craft are being controlled by groups. I couldn't even begin to tell you the names of the current controllers. But in my day, the United States and Great Britain still had a fairly hard control over where this technology was going. We had bases in Norway. We had in Jabal Tawak in Saudi Arabia, west of Bahrain, all underground. We had research being done here at Pine Gap in the center of Australia, and another one which is called the Star Trek of the North in the Kimberley regions of the mountains of northern Australia. We had them down at the South Pole. Dr. Maxfield in Dallas showed me photographs taken in their submarine trips down there to reach the bases. Some of these bases where the really good stuff has gone on is just totally inaccessible by you as a civilian.
My God. All of this going on right under our noses, in fact, under our Earth, is what you're saying.
A great deal of it, yes. It has. They have broadened their horizon since then and moved above the ground, but in those days, yeah.
All right. What was, Stan, the latest craft that you had anything to do with? What were its capabilities? What could it do?
The ones that I actually designed and drew papers up for the Aeronautical Research Group was an aircraft that superheated air. It was slow starting. It would throw the air up out a hole in the middle of the saucer shape like a donut, splash it around the surface down underneath, and recirculate the air, as I say, like a bumblebee spinning or like a smoke ring. And we would inject a 6% CO2 solution in a nitrogen gas envelope in the center of that, and that's how we would start it and make it an electric plasma like it's in fluorescent lights. And that's why they glow, or those type did. Now that's what I was working on, because I had not come to the level yet of these pulse magnetic field craft. I was shown the other stuff. And certainly we have craft that fly using technology very similar, as you pointed out, to the Philadelphia radar shield experiment. I have tried these things. I've tried to recreate them in my lab here and have proceeded to hurt myself, one of my staff, to the point that we are not going to do it for a while until we think we understand a couple of things a little bit better. It produces magnetic fields that hurt you.
I've talked to so many people about magnetic fields. It has been a lifelong fascination for me. I'm going to jump way ahead here because we're going to have to come back to the technical part. I'm going to jump ahead and ask you about one of the paragraphs you sent me in the email. Mm-hmm. And it is, I encourage you in your search for the truth in these matters, but I caution you to ask yourself, what will you do when you find out? Will you like the answer? Will you wish you had not found out? Why? What did you mean by that? And please explain.
Well, Art, there are some things that I do know about what is happening that are going, once you find them out, and I think you will, and a lot of other folks, you're going to find yourself very threatened in your lifestyle, very threatened, so much so that you may wish you hadn't found out. I mean, you might just rather have lived in blissful ignorance rather than worry about what the implications of it are.
You know, Stan, you sound very much like somebody else that I've interviewed many times and who is a good friend of mine named John Lear. Do you know her?
I've talked to John a couple times on the phone, but I've never met him.
He says much the same kind of thing, Stan, that you really ought to perhaps live your life day to day, enjoy your life, and there are some things that you'd be better off not knowing, and that is, in essence, what you are saying.
Yes.
I want to know these things, Stan.
Art, I appreciate that. As I said to you, my concern is that in kind of good civic duty, some of the things that we might discuss might move some of your audience to do things that they shouldn't. I mean, like silly things like stockpiling, hoarding, and dropping out. And I wouldn't want that to happen. It's difficult for me to figure out how to say it.
All right. I let me put your mind at ease. I cannot imagine anything you would say that would be more startling than some of the things John Lear has said or some of the things Gordon Michael Scallion has said regarding earth changes.
Have you got Gordon on the program?
Oh, Gordon is also a very good friend of mine. And
gee, blimey, I correspond with all these guys. I didn't realize that.
You do correspond with Gordon?
Oh, yeah. He and I talk and exchange email and whatever.
All right. Well, that's amazing. It is a small world, isn't it?
Art, I'm tied into the U.S. government databases with permission to the USGS, and I draw earthquake and volcano information. I also draw data on the sun from Kitt Peak every day. I get a daily feed from them, analyzing and predicting as best we can where the next major quakes are going to be and the intensity. That's why Gordon Michael Scallion and I talk.
You are aware, of course, of the large 7.2 earthquake south of Mexico City earlier in the day.
Yes, I'm aware of that. It came across the screen this morning.
Do you know how that, can you comment on how that relates to Scallion's latest predictions, you know, the series of quakes he has predicted?
Well, I got to confess something. I have so much to read that I glance at his newsletters, hit the high points, and put it in the stack with all the rest, and they kind of run together. Can you remind me of what particular...
All right. Well, he has predicted a series of four earthquakes that will occur before the end of the year, culminating in a very large earthquake in California. And if this series of quakes completes in the year 1995, he then predicts there will be a major catastrophic earth movement that will literally change the western map and do a lot more. So when you say that you know things that would cause people to hoard or to drop out, I doubt that you could say anything that would be more shocking or cause people to go in that direction more than he has. So
all right, well, certainly that is a major part of it. That is somewhat natural disasters, and there are a lot more of those in the area for asteroids and comets over the next 10 to 12 years that are probably equally as threatening, if not more. Certainly what Gordon is saying, I agree in this respect. I've been analyzing data from the NASA CWIF satellite, sea surface temperature satellites, over the last year, and there is a strange like heat wave or heat pattern underneath the crust of the Earth's surface that has several hot spots. And one of them is off Mexico and Southern California, Baja California. Another off Florida. In fact, on both sides of Florida, up near Georgia, and the other on the east coast of Florida. All along the west coast of Europe to the Atlantic Ridge, the Mediterranean, and Japan is absolutely chock-a-block. And in the Philippines, all these areas are suffering intense crustal activity. As to what is causing the temperature rise, we know that there are magma movements deep down in the surface, but I can't be positive enough about the cause and effect link to say that that's doing it.
All right. Well, that is very similar to what Gordon Michael Scallion has said regarding a plasma displacement deep within the Earth. So you agree on that, I guess?
Yes. Well, I can see it. I mean, I guess I'm a pragmatist, and I like to see the data, and I trust NASA's data reasonably well at this point anyway on this particular subject.
All right, again, so that we might understand, you're in essence laying out some scientific evidence, you say, that backs up what Scallion says he sees. So give it to me again, please. This, what are you able to access that tells you that the magma is moving in this way?
Well, I've gone into the NASA, for people that are on the Internet, they can access this through NASA's webpage for CWIF, SEAWIF. In fact, they can do a search and find CWIF and get into the CWIF color images for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Those are done fairly regularly each week. and this is a color map of the temperature of the Earth's water services, as done by their satellite and other data gathering services. What you do is you take two of those photographs, and you use something like Photoshop, a photo processing program.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you subtract the two images to get the change in temperature, whether it be dropping or rising. And that is how you make a differential thermograph of that, which is what we've been doing in our newsletter and various other email feeds that we supply, keeping an eye on it. And by golly, you can see it. There's just no question about it. Big white splashes appear where the temperature is rising in these areas off the California coast, off the Aleutians. And Japan, I tell you what, I wouldn't live there in a fit at the moment. The heat spot is very concentrated under Japan all the way into the Chinese coast, and I would expect earthquakes and small tidal waves between now and December. That's just an educated guess, not a prophecy, just a guess.
We are having here in America, in the Caribbean, one of the very worst hurricane seasons in all of recorded history. You'd have to go back 60 or 70 years to find something equivalent, and it looks like, and it's still very early in the season, so something is going on with the weather. Is it related?
I think so. I know Scientific American put out an article about the magma sheet rising in the Atlantic off the European coast, and so there is a large heat influx there, or rise there, and certainly in the Caribbean area, or Caribbean, there is a massive heat buildup underneath in the water. Again, I assume that it is plasma activities deep down, you know, 500-600 kilometers down. I don't have enough data to be exact, but it is enough to convince me that when people like Scallion and some of the others start to see this, that there's something happening.
Gordon Michael Scallion came on my program not very long ago and gave us a specific warning about volcanic activity in the Caribbean. And
that I can believe.
Yes. And so that would relate to the heat spot that you say anybody with internet access could see for themselves.
Yeah, they'd have to subtract the two images month by month. I just took just August, from the 1st of August to the last of August, and subtracted the two images and got a heat pattern build up in those areas. I've done it for longer than that, but they're just in 1 month, there's enough to tell you that we've got troubles there. And it's up toward where Florida actually hooks on to the American continent. You know, where that little bottleneck is. The heat pattern is right under that. It is obvious. There's no question about it. In fact, I looked at it and I thought, I've got to be wrong because we don't have volcanoes in Florida.
Well, what are mainstream scientists, researchers, USGS types, saying about it? Or are they discussing it, or is it open?
I haven't seen any open traffic on it. Understand that USGS is under a lot of pressure right now to be shut down. In the height of all the earthquakes and volcanoes and terrible things that have been happening, with them doing so much research to help us predict earthquakes in California and Japan and whatever, Congress, U.S. Congress, has wanted to shut them down, has compromised instead and laid off hundreds and hundreds of USGS staff in the last month. Now, I understand why, but a lot of people wouldn't. USGS is a semi-public government arm, and there's another group that does monitoring called Shakelady, Shakelady, for the Defense Department, and they have infinitely better resources than USGS, but not available to the public. So that's why FEMA gets the feeds more than USGS.
Is it your view that they know very well what is coming and will not tell us?
Art, in a word, yes. And listen to me. Now, this is one of the things that I'm very reluctant to discuss openly, but there's a lot of scientists telling me we should, and I'm not sure I agree with them. But if you knew, Art, a particular piece of real estate, large real estate piece, was going to suffer a lot of damage like this, it was going to impact property values, if not destroy them, commerce, industry, whatever, and you were the government, in wisdom, would you make a public announcement too early in the game and say to people, oh, look, you might die in the next year or two because this is going to happen, but stay there until we get things organized. We'll let you know. You couldn't do it. It would be a mass exodus. As it is, since Gordon has come out saying what he's saying, and he's so darned accurate, the property values in California have dropped. They've dropped all along the west of the Rocky Mountains, except in Oregon and part of Washington State. And for the life of me, I don't know why they don't drop there, because the volcanoes are two of them are on standby one alert at the moment.
Stan, I am going to have to go to news here at the top of the hour. Can you hold?
Sure.
All right. Again, there will be silence till about 06:15 past the hour. Stay right where you are. Stan in Perth, Australia. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Warp Bells Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 14, 1995.
Good morning, everybody. I'll do my own little intro here. We've got Stan Dale. He's a very special guest from Perth, Australia. We've got him on here all the way from Perth, Australia. And he's telling us about craft he's been working on and about things he knows that, frankly, will curl your hair. So we're going to bring him back in just a moment. All right, now, to recap very briefly, and we're going to have to, this is a man, Stan Dale, who says he was recruited by Edward Teller's man, Dr. James Maxfield, in Dallas in 1971, and went to Australia. Did work on flying saucer craft, not theirs, not alien craft, but our craft that we now have and use. We've moved from that area, and we're going to retrench there a little bit, into some of the areas, he gave me a paragraph here I asked him about, and it says, "Believe me when I tell you I encourage you in your search for the truth in these matters, but I caution you, ask yourself, what will you do when you find out? Will you like the answer? Will you wish you had not found out?" I sometimes wonder what it'd be like to live life in a sort of oblivious, lemming-like pursuit of worldly stimuli, not knowing what to do. I asked him what that meant, and it seems to mean much the same thing that Gordon Michael Scallion has been saying. Late news, an earthquake in Oklahoma as well. You know about the 7.2 in Mexico, a very large quake. Thank God, not many killed. Now we find one, let me see, it was actually in Oklahoma, about 25 miles south of Medicine Lodge, Kansas, at 6:32 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time today. 4.1, that's absolutely an incredible place. We are having earthquakes in strange places. Back now to Perth, Australia, and Stan Dale. Are you there, Stan?
Yes, I am, Art.
Excellent.
I've been listening to you, and I'm on the Art Bell channel on the IRC radio chat, and one of your listeners in California has just signed on here by a satellite link somehow or another.
I
Riverside,
see.
California. So you've got people out there listening.
That's absolutely remarkable. Which IRC chat channel are you on?
I've set up a channel called Art Bell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, and I'm the administrator called LeFalcon, L-E, well, you'll see it anyway if you get there. Art Bell. Just tell them to type in Art Bell on their channel selector, and they can converse with us while we're on air.
All the way from Perth, Australia. My God, the world is getting very small.
And I know, Art. I'm old enough that I remember when things weren't this way.
All right. So let us quickly retrench, if you wouldn't mind. There's such a large new audience out there right now. Tell them about the kind of craft we now have in our possession. You believe, or actually I pushed you into it, that it began with the Philadelphia experiment, or at least that was the genesis of the technology that you then moved forward with. And before we even get into that, let me ask you credential-wise, here is a question from Elaine, who says, would you ask your guest, how was he able to start
independent work immediately after graduating from the Air Force Academy. Most people have a military obligation after graduation.
Well, tell her that I was in the class of 67, but there were 180 of us who resigned in a protest against the government interfering with our activities at the Academy in 64. I served 4 years after that in the Air Force Reserve at the Strategic Air Command Base at Fort Worth at Carswell, which meant that I could work in civilian life, and so I had a real-world job in the computer industry. I trained at IBM and then went into industry in Dallas, and I paid for what research I did at home.
So a lot of your research was actually very private.
Very private, and believe me, I wasn't out heading up a big team or anything at that time. This is why I couldn't understand how they found out what I was doing.
Well, so then apparently they did find out that you were dabbling in technology that you say they were doing more than just dabbling in, and they brought you into their wing, and by that you do name names, Dr. Maxfield, an associate of Edward Teller's, is that correct?
That's correct.
And tell the people one more time, if you would, as in best layman's terms that you can muster up, what kind of craft we have now. What are called flying saucers? Ours, not theirs.
Okay. The ones that we have made are in two categories. Aircraft, which move the air electrically around the aircraft to make it suck itself forward, or electromagnetically, which uses electricity and magnetism in certain flowing patterns in and around and through the craft to make it move relative to gravity or to inertial field. Is that too technical?
Well, let me try this. What are these craft capable of? What speeds can they attain? Can they leave the atmosphere without a problem and so forth?
The later craft, the electromagnetic one, yes, they can. They can leave the atmosphere. The ones I was designing were limited to atmospheric flight. The later stuff that I was shown and later studied could do things that probably the Philadelphia experiment touched upon, where you can actually gate between two areas in a very short space of time, almost like dimensional jumping. Again, I'm not an expert in that area. I only know what I saw in the assembly area and the papers that I was asked to read on the subject at that time.
Is this kind of a bending of space or a jumping across, or how would you describe it?
Sorry, I'm just looking at the mail coming in over your channel at the moment. We've got some very interesting comments.
I'm sure you'll find it very diverting.
Well, very rude in some cases.
I'm sure.
All right. Sorry, repeat your question.
My question was, was it a bending of space, or is that the way you would describe it,
well,
a bending of space or jumping across?
As far as I can understand, it's in line with what Einstein was postulating, that we can have mass operating in the same area but at different frequencies. Certainly, light can be bent using these pulsed overlapping fields. I've seen that myself in the lab. Beyond that, I can only guess that it's something like the hyperspace jump that you see in the sci-fi channels or, you know, Star Trek or something like that, like a warp of space.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the case, theoretically, even light is not a limit of velocity.
Now, here's a good question for you also by fax. If we have the kind of technology that you are talking about, then, and we've been developing it generally since about the 50s, which is what I believe you said, why in the world did we engage in such an expensive, stupid space race to go to the moon and all the rest of that? I mean, was it all a charade?
No, not entirely. Understand, you have to justify or explain R&D in a lot of areas that we needed for our own technology. If you have a bona fide space research program, what you do is you go out to various contractors and say to them, will you make this part or this box to do such and such? You have these kind of feeds coming in, and we want these kind of feeds coming out. Here are the parameters. Go build it and send it to us at this place. And so contractors can make things that can be used in both programs or in space research in general, never knowing what the final product looks like when they put it all together. So it allows you to get a government or public budget for something that is really not in the open arena. It's a black budget legally.
So you claim when we have ongoing black budgets and black projects that are dealing with and enhancing and continuing to build these craft that so many people see fly?
Yes.
Is there going to come a point, Stan, when all of this is going to be made public? Is the government, in your view, going to come out and say, all right, people like Stan Deo and so many others have blown it wide open, we might as well admit it. Will there be the equivalent of the Hazel O'Leary coming out and saying, yes, we poisoned the children or whatever?
Yes, it will come out. And I'm not sure whether it's purely because of my pushing or Stanton Friedman or John Lear or any of the rest. Most of us know each other in this game as far as what information we've been releasing. And we're concerned that it will come out in a manner that is not exactly true, but people will believe the lie. I got to tell you, look, I'm a student of the Bible and Hebrew and things like that. No particular religion. I'm just a student of those things. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the Genesis 6 account, there's a lot of discussion about off-worlders, sons of God, Nephilim, this kind of stuff, coming down to Earth a long time ago and interbreeding with our people. There are Sumerian records, there are Vedic records, there are Egyptian records. You just can't really ignore them. So from this particular aspect, I tend to study the Hebrew and Christian prophecies and Nostradamus and a few others that talk about things that could be happening now that we have scientific proof of, if you wish. And so I tend to start, you know, thinking like maybe these prophecies are correct.
All right. You are way off in Australia, but apparently you are, through the Internet, very well connected. I presume you are familiar with the story of Bob Lazar.
Oh, yeah. I've seen his tapes.
All right, good. Bob Lazar also describes technology somewhat similar to what you are describing. He claims to have worked on or claims to have been back engineering what he thought, I say again, what he thought were alien spacecraft. Is it possible that what he was working on was an experiment of a craft that is indeed ours, not theirs?
Possible, but I tend to believe that we have other beings here. Understand, before 1952, we didn't have these things, but we had reports of them. Okay, I mean, there have been reports and sightings and contacts for hundreds of years in our history. The crash in 1898, I think it was, in Texas, of the UFO that hit the water tower in that small town and came down. These things would indicate that they've been here before we built them. So he may have actually been back engineering some little critter's craft. I don't know. The biblical accounts and the Vedic accounts and the Sumerian accounts talk about humanoids with superpowers, so they look like us.
Yes. Are you there?
Say again?
Are you there?
Yeah, sorry. We just had a glitch on the line.
All right. All right, so you consider it possible there are others here, and yet at the same time you're telling us straight out that we have this technology, we have these craft, we've had them for some time, and if not all, then a good bunch of the ones that people see fly, and I'm pretty well believing that people see these things, because I've seen one myself. Yes, I'm sorry to say I have. I was almost afraid to admit it publicly, Stan, but I have seen it. I saw a triangular craft that floated just above my head, and there's no mistaking. It was close.
Sure it wasn't Venus or the moon or Swamp Cat?
No, Stan.
I'm teasing.
Believe me, I saw it. And I've taken a lot of heat for that, for admitting that I did, but I did. I live near Area 51. You think that Area 51 is not the center of the kind of activity that we've been talking about anymore. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if it ever was, but certainly I do know that when we have a secret project, we don't hang a sign up and says, this is a secret project, please don't come in here or we'll shoot you.
That's true.
You never even know it exists. It could be like a bakery shop or a Piggly Wiggly delivery place. I mean, you'd never know.
All right, now I want to move to another area quickly, and that is that tricky little paragraph about finding out things I might not want to know. And you said, well, this would cause people to panic or to begin to stockpile things or to move. Specifically, Stan, what do you believe is about to happen?
Well, okay. Scientifically, or like at least analyzing data and trying to extrapolate it, I see that we are moving into extreme periods of earthquake and volcanic activity on the planet, things that we have not seen in a long, long, long time. The United States is going to suffer a great deal in the West Coast, up the New Madrid fault line, and in Florida. Europe is, and North Africa, Northwest Africa, Spain, and the Mediterranean is also going to suffer a great deal of activity. Japan is probably going to be hit the worst. I can see the heat patterns building up under it on the satellite photos. In my guess, and this is certainly just a guess, I'm not an expert there, I would say that in the immediate future, talking in months, we're going to see some earthquake activity in Japan that will be astounding. I don't know when Scallion's forecast is, has put the great Japanese earthquakes, but certainly we have graphs here that show traditional periods of activity. And there's one in mid-October, one in mid-November, one in late to mid-December, and then we skip over to January, mid to late January, and then a dead period for a while. So I'm watching that area very closely for the next 4 months.
All right, so that people might understand how you are reaching these conclusions,
yep.
These are pretty frightening things. What is going on with the Earth, or what is man doing, or what is happening that's going to precipitate this?
Well, man is not responsible for all of this. We're talking large dynamics here, planetary dynamics. The sun itself has done something rather strange, and over the last 5 years, solar physicists have noticed new frequencies coming out of the sun. It emits characteristic frequencies all the time. And one particular study has suggested that a couple of these higher frequencies are being absorbed by plankton, or phytoplankton in the ocean, or various other suspended solids in the ocean, and is causing abnormal heating.
Mm-hmm.
This, in turn, breeds more of these phytoplankton and archaeobacteria and various other things that are breeding, which absorbs more heat, and then the water actually changes density when it gets hot, so you have cold water versus hot water densities, which is putting differential pressures on like weights on the surface of the Earth, causing more earthquake stress. Now, this is from a Japanese paper on the subject in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at these things and try to take the NASA data feed that we can get a hold of and build it into graphic pictures so that we can understand it at a glance. I wish there was a way that we could show you that, because it I can certainly send it to you if you have some kind of a web page and you could share it with folks.
I do have a web page.
Do you?
Yes.
All right,
and if you go to the web browser and simply enter Art Bell, it will take you right there.
All right. All right. Okay. Well, I'll do that, and I won't do it just now. I'll have to do it after we get off the air.
Yeah. Oh, that. Please. Yes. All right. Now, I would like to let the audience ask you a couple of questions. They're very obviously very anxious to do that. So I'm going to put it with what time we have left, and I'm going to carry it till the top of the hour.
All right. You want me to read in the questions they've been asking over the IRC, because my board is absolutely flooded here with questions.
I'm sure it is. Sure. If you want to answer a couple of the good ones, go ahead.
There's a guy named Tremor, T-R-E-M-O-R.
Okay. I would rather not use any last names.
No, this is all nicknames. You know how they
are. All right. Yes, I do. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Trimmer has dialed in. Could you on the air tell us if these craft have gone into space? Answer, yes. They certainly have. sorry. Just another one of those rude questions came across.
Well, yeah, I encourage you, even though the Internet is fun and all and chat channels are fun, it will be diverting for you to try to concentrate, so you really ought to sort of not concentrate on that for a while.
Okay, I'll turn them off. We'll look at it later. Take your phone calls. We'll go by the phone lines.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, here we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air, believe it or not, with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia.
Oh, hi. How are we doing?
Okay.
All right. My name's Joe. I'm from Aurora Grande.
Yes.
I was wondering, the craft that you're working on?
Yeah.
Do they, how do gravity A and gravity B waves correspond with the electromagnetic propulsion that you're talking about?
Are you speaking in terms of what Bob Lazar presented, are you?
Yeah.
Okay, I had not used terminology like Bob is doing, and I don't know Bob. My understanding of how these fields, the new fields work, and I certainly haven't got mine to work yet.
Very quickly.
Is that the one of the three vectors of overlapping magnetic fields is opened, and the other two cancel in two right angle fields, which produces thrust in the Earth's field. That's it's very simplified, but I hope that says something to you.
Well, I don't know that it said anything to me, but it sounds like if it's true that somebody's going to come and see you pretty soon with a suit on, Stan. I'm at the bottom of the hour, so hold on down under there, all right? That's Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. We'll come back and do another half hour with your questions.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
Good morning from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. I have a very special guest on the line all the way from Perth, Australia. His name is Stan Deo. He's got a lot of very incredible things to say, and in just a moment, we're going to get back to him. I must tell you, I'm getting faxes at a rate that I couldn't possibly handle. Just a couple of them for you. Stan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Back to Perth, Australia. All right, here is one fax. Hello, Art. Like your guest, I know of him. I was in a group that designed the simulators, disk simulators, signed anonymous with no fax header. Does that sound right to you?
What can I say? I don't know who it could have been. Certainly, I have a couple people in mind, but I don't know that they would do a thing like that, or over the air, I mean, anyway.
I understand. Well, they signed it anonymous, and there's no way I could trace it. And then,
it might be somebody just trying to have a bit of fun.
Yeah, well, maybe. Then this, hi, Art, please continue to prompt your guest on the things that we may not want to know. Thanks, Jeff in Las Vegas.
Okay. All right, well, look... Can I go for it here?
Go for it.
Okay. Art, disregarding my history with the government and the flying disc research and all that kind of stuff, if you just start back probably 18 years ago when I started researching why things were being covered up and what was really happening behind the scenes in the world in various areas, I came across some Christian folk and some Jewish folk, some rabbis and things that I studied with. And... what has amazed me over the last 18 years is that my scientific research has shown that it is very probable, almost immediately, that things that these prophecies have been talking about will be happening to our planet. And to give you an example of this, I mean, what I'm going to tell you about, I can see happening from scientific evidence in our next decade sometime. Massive earthquake increases in diverse places all over the planet. A comet hitting the Earth in the oceans and polluting the water and a lot of the rivers in around the area and killing a lot of sea life and marine travelers at the time. The Earth actually rocking on its axis, possibly shifting its magnetic polar orientation at the moment. The sun actually going dark, either from a dark cloud or dust cloud coming in between it and us, or from the sun emitting particles in the solar wind, which is certainly okay at the moment, but could become unstable. All of these things are mentioned in Christian and Nostradamus and various other prophecies. Mother Shipton in England, as you would have seen possibly if you read Nexus magazine in the States.
Yes, well, what bothers me, what unnerves me terribly, is that I hear it from Gordon Michael Scallion. I hear it from others who would call themselves prophets or visionaries or intuitives or whatever. Doesn't matter. It's just a name. And then I hear it from people like you who are basing it not so much on a prophecy or of any sort, biblical or otherwise, but scientific evidence.
I know, and believe me, Art, people can interpret scientifically data in about a zillion different ways. I have tried to be as objective about it as I can. I hate being labeled a prophet or something like that, but I cannot ignore the increase in all the disasters. It has happened as we thought it would so far, and I'm concerned that people will not understand what the whole thing is about on the planet before it gets them. That's why I wrote the books. You know, I've tried to explain a lot more. In fact, a lot of the questions that are being answered are asked over the air.
All right, well, you're in Australia now.
Yep.
How will Australia fare in these large earth changes?
Our west coast is probably going to suffer a bit of water damage, possibly a fracture line almost down the middle of the country. Certainly I can see evidence of it on the stress chart. The northeastern Australian area up near the Indonesian islands and New Zealand and the Solomons will suffer tidal wave or tsunami damage and possibly some quakes as this progresses, because that whole area is just terribly active.
All right, and so that we all understand how you're predicting this again, you're looking at charts that show you heating in places that you interpret to mean a magma shift is going on, a major magma shift. Is that correct?
I think that's what's causing it, yes. I'm also analyzing USGS earthquake data from the United States Geophysical Service on a daily basis, and I have a way to present the data graphically that lets us see a little bit more of the patterns.
All right, let's go to the phones again. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan. Hello.
Yes, all right. This is Karen in Houston, and hey, Stan. I've read some of what you've written, and I've been a long time wanting to talk to you, fella. there's an organization here in Houston, and it's akin to MUFON.
Yes.
And I've dropped in on some of their meetings, and out of their little library, I checked out one of your books. And I would like to ask you something very simple, but you don't have to respond if you don't want to.
All right.
All right. I've been very concerned about this topic.
Right.
I'm like you. I read everything I can get my hands on and talk to everybody I can. When it comes to the grand experiment, is that part of what you're talking about as far as the those who are hovering above us?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not so much an experiment as it is a resolution of a conflict that occurred out there.
Now, one moment.
All right.
One moment, please. Both of you, I don't know what you're both talking about. Who wants to explain it?
Let Karen.
Well, are we talking about the same thing now, Stan, above the 33rd? 33rd level?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we're discussing it, but go ahead and explain to the audience. Go ahead.
Well, something I read that had your name on it as being the author of it, it was a booklet kind of a thing talking about the Masonic Order and those above the 33rd level. And
right,
I have talked with a world traveler who has told me that the 34th and 35th are the ones who will come out and will take charge of things.
All right, and, well, listen, let's hold it there. I think we've got enough to know what she was, the road she was going down is.
Karen, to start with, I don't recognize the article that you're saying. I mean, certainly if it has my name on it, it doesn't necessarily mean I wrote it. We have been finding a lot of stuff that people have been trying to write on my behalf floating around. I am aware of the Masonic organizations around the planet, particularly the Grand Orient Lodge in Europe, and their relationship to the so-called Illuminati or the New World Order. Certainly, I still hold to that position. But the conflict I'm talking about is what in the Bible Belt we call the angelic conflict, or the conflict up in the heavens, out there amongst the beings that created us back in the Garden of Eden type experiment or courtroom or whatever. That is where I would be coming from, Karen.
All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Dale. Hello.
Hi, Stan. This Gecko.
Where are you, sir?
Reno.
Okay. Turn your radio off.
All right.
All right. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Well, he's not turning his radio off, so we're moving on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale. Hello.
This is Escondido Kogo.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask your guest why he was expelled from the Air Force Academy. I believe he said that. Whether he has any scientific degrees or achievements, and why would we work in Australia on a classified U.S. aircraft? I know of only one base there. It's the Dallas Springs, which is a listening post once run by TRW.
All right. Stay on the line and let him answer. Stan?
Okay. First question, I resigned, as did 180 others. If you look at the newspapers of the time in 64, you'll see that 180 cadets resigned. The first press release was that we were cheating on exams. The U.S. government later recanted and admitted that we'd had a disciplinary disagreement with U.S. Air Force for becoming involved in cadet activities to the point of hypnosis. And we had passed our final exams, or like waived them, because we refused to take them if they didn't get out of our affairs.
Wait a minute, you say you were expelled for hypnosis?
No, we quit. We resigned because we were tired of the Air Force being involved, like in our cadet activities, to the point of hypnotizing us and using high-speed flash cueing and things which we didn't volunteer for. There were a number of other issues as well, but this is what we resigned over, and there were members of all classes that resigned, and it was such a big scandal that they just swept under the carpet. So after that, I didn't finish and get a degree. I studied on my own bat wherever I was. And certainly, you are correct, TRW was one of the contractors and may still be at Alice Springs at Pine Gap, but it's a DARPA project that the Navy primarily controlled in the beginning with MHD stuff.
Why would they work in Australia rather than the United States?
Well, because there's a lot of open space down here to do research and what we want to do, and there wasn't as much chance of running into people like there would be in the States. There's not many places, even Arizona, that are quite as isolated as we are down here.
That would make sense. That is one of the most isolated, I think you dubbed it the most isolated city in the world, Stan?
It is, and to the caller there, the Alice Springs facility is only one of five bases that we have down here that I'm aware of, it's in the middle of a desert that is in the area where they are is an Aboriginal reserve, and you're not even allowed on that reserve. It's like Indian reservation territory. You can't even get close.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia.
Yeah, this is Don in Wichita, and I wanted to ask if your guest, Stan, has read Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Yes, I have.
And a young question would be, you know, Saddam Hussein's dealings with France prior to the Gulf War, getting nuclear reactors, do you think he understands the relationship of southern France and in Jerusalem and has some insights into technologies that we may not want him to know?
Actually, I'll probably get a hand slap for this, but I think so. I know that he thought Hitler hung the moon. He studied everything about him, including his esoteric sciences. So, yes, I think he does.
All right. First-time caller line. You are Dan calling from San Antonio,
Dan,
Texas.
San Antonio.
Okay.
And I want to ask Dan if he... I know Lear has some feelings about a demonic aspect to this, and Noria Hayakawa seems to be heading in the same direction in terms of biblical prophecy.
Yes, and, I agree with Noria.
Uh-huh. And I wanted you to address specifically the relationship of the government involvement with what might be that particular aspect first, and then second, whether there's a dual aspect to the otherworldliness of the situation. And I'll just listen to it on the phone. Thanks.
On the radio. Okay, thank you. If I understand correctly what you said, the government's participation in this is a very confusing one at the moment. It is comprised of a lot of people of differing philosophies. From the biblical aspect, there are a lot of us, including Nurio, I think, that are seeing that the prophecies which speak of Babylon, the new Babylon of this age, does include the United States, if not particularly target the United States, as the Babylon of this age, which is not a good thing because it tells people who are members of that community of Babylon to get out of it so they are not afflicted by the same judgments that are going to strike that land. Now, again, this is interpreting prophecy and code from a long time ago. We may be wrong, but that is where we're heading. That government, our government, U.S. government, may actually be in charge of the new Babylon, the confusion of this age. So the second question, Art, can you remember the second question?
No, I'm sorry. I certainly can't.
Sorry. It slipped my mind.
That one floated away. That was a tough answer. Hi, Art. Chilling, very chilling. Would you spell Stan's last name? It is D-E-Y-O. And you mentioned that you've got a website, Stan?
Not yet. I have an email. Do we give them that or not?
Yeah, if you want to give an email address there in Perth, Australia, go ahead.
All right. It's one word, STANDEYO, @INET.AU.
AU at the end?
Yeah, that's for Australia.
All right. Well, I hope everybody got that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale. Hi.
Hi. This is Tim in San Diego.
Yes.
I just want to ask, if this has been going on for so long, how come, you know, how come it hasn't been leaked earlier than this?
Well, I think it has. I mean, there have been a lot of people like Professor James McDonald that suicided out in an Arizona hospital and he tried to leak information. People like, what was the physicist over in Florida, connected with the Vero Project anyway. There have been a number of people that tried to leak it very hard and just got aced.
Well, all right, so how come you're not worried about being aced?
I was in the beginning. I ran in this country when I broke with my controllers and, you know, grew a beard and used a couple of, you know, somewhat clever techniques to hide for a few months until I figured out how I was going to fight them. And then I came out and I published names. I named names without any question about it. I named names and places and people. And to this day, I've never heard from them. They've gone to ground and tucked their tail between their legs because they don't want any publicity.
So in other words, they figured once it's out, the best road is to leave you alone.
Either that or to help me and perhaps feed me data that would steer me the way they wanted to go. I don't know. I've been very aware of that possibility as well.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia.
This is Amy in Mississippi.
In Mississippi, yes.
Yes. You mentioned earthquake on the New Madrid Fault. Can you tell me how far south that goes?
I don't have the map in front of me, but I would say in Mississippi it would be, from what I've seen on the USGS chart, certainly you can get it, it would be north of you, but the damage from the change of the course of the Mississippi may be the problem in the south. I'm not a prophet. I'm just kind of estimating from where I see fault lines appearing up north of you there. There's intense activity north of you, probably one state away, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitate to tell people to start packing their bags and moving.
Well, judging from what you've said, thank you, in Mississippi. Judging from what you've said, where would people move to, Stan?
I don't have an answer to that. I think it's time people kind of start looking at their spirituality and wonder what they do in the next life, because I don't think that there's going to be a lot of safe places on the planet.
So you, very much like John Lear, would advise people to enjoy your life, enjoy your families, and don't look too hard at what's ahead because you might not want to know.
Certainly I would advise you to enjoy your life and your families, but on the other hand, I would encourage you to give some thought that if such a thing, if it does happen in your lifetime, is there an afterlife? Do we go on beyond this and explore this? Certainly, you know, these are areas I've talked about in the magazine and in the books because I think it's important. At this point, we cannot avoid what is coming. We've got to look at whether we're going to live after we die.
In other words, that's the best thing to look forward to because the cataclysm that's coming is coming.
There are things we haven't even begun to discuss about new money systems and things that I know are in place and about to be put down on us across the planet that are, again, biblical prophecy. And that is not a natural disaster. That's a man-made catastrophe. There are just so many things that make it unbearable if you don't have a life after this. There's not a lot to look forward to.
Okay. We're about out of time, Stan. Internet addresses are very difficult. Give it one more time.
All right. STANDEYO. @, that's a little A with a curly around it.
Right.
INET, full stop, or what do you call it, period, NET, period, AU.
And that will get emailed to you.
Yes, probably zillions of emails, but anyway, yes, I'll try to answer them.
All right. What time is it there now in Australia?
It is now 3:56 in the afternoon on Friday. We have sampled your day, and it's going to be a nice day from what we see.
Stan, I cannot thank you enough. It has been fascinating. I don't know what to believe. But I'm a good listener, and you certainly are a good teller of stories. And so,
Art, I'm going to send you some photographic data for you to use on your web page. It's the only way I know that we can share it with the folks, and I'll certainly do that.
And I certainly will share it. Stan,
thank you.
Thank you. From Perth, Australia, that was Stan Dale. Wow. That's going to cause you to swallow hard a couple of times. When we come back, we'll switch gears. I've got a big announcement coming up. Don't go away.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
You may begin to learn that I'm not like other talk show hosts. I do things that are different. I concentrate not only on current events, world news, politics, but a lot of other things. And I have a lot of curiosities, and I follow them. And this is yet another case of that. This involves a man who sent me it was email yesterday, and here's what he sent me. I own an air conditioning business, and I've been trained in the effects of CFC
venting. I tried desperately to get hold of you this morning, but was unsuccessful due to the 800 lines crashing. Yeah, that's another subject we'll cover. Please call me tonight at blah, 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 between 11 and 3 Central Time, and I'd be elated to fill in my fellow listeners on the facts concerning the hole in the ozone layer. This is a very serious problem, and it needs to be addressed. With high regards, Pat. Well, a lot of conservatives, I am not one of them, incidentally, think that the whole ozone layer thing is a bunch of absolute horse elimination. And that there is no, well, there is a hole in the ozone, but it's no big deal. Now, the other day, the UN, through U.S. satellite imagery, detected the hole over the Antarctic to be the size, they said, of Europe. We then got a report saying that the ozone depletion over the U.S. since the mid-1950s is 10%. That, if true, is really serious. Now, I know that a lot of you out there think it's a bunch of bunk. Let's talk to somebody in the business and see what he thinks. So here he comes. His name is Pat. Pat, do you want to give your last name on the air?
No.
No? You're in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, W-O-D-T.
W-O-D-T.
That's right.
All right. Pat, if you would, you say that this ozone layer hole is a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't proven that Freon causes this problem, but they have eliminated every other possibility. So that's just their way of saying that's it, but we're not going to say we proved it.
All right, well, let's back up a little bit before we get to Freon and CFCs. The ozone layer, or the ozone layer above us, do you believe the figures the scientists give us about a 10% depletion above North America?
Absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely.
Do you believe them when they say the size of the measured size of the hole above the Antarctic is the size of Europe, bigger than ever previously been measured?
And without a doubt, it's only going to get bigger.
What is the best evidence that would suggest that you've learned that CFCs are the culprit?
Well, the way they do it is it takes 10 to 15 years for them to get up there. That's the scariest part, because we don't even know what's going to happen in 10 to 15 years from what's already been vented before we had to not do it at all, although there are people doing it. But anyway, the carbon atoms, once they reach ultraviolet rays, are broken away from the freon, from the chlorofluoromethane, and they become singular. And what they do is steal an oxygen atom away from ozone, which is O3,
right,
turning it into oxygen. And then they let that oxygen atom go, and they grab another, and then another. And one carbon atom can destroy millions of ozone atoms.
One carbon atom can destroy millions of ozone atoms. Well, what created, or maybe I'm beyond your scope here, but are the ozone layer now that shields us from some of the harmful radiation from the sun, how is that maintained? Lightning, I know when we have a lightning strike, that creates ozone.
Right.
Is that ozone that enters the layer then?
I'm not really sure. I know that up until 50 years ago, there wasn't any problem with it. There wasn't any global warming. And mass production of air conditioning started about 50 years ago, and venting started then, too.
And the problem has been measurably larger.
Absolutely.
In that period of time. So you don't think it's a bunch of ideological baloney. You think it is a real danger.
Absolutely, because you can imagine just one carbon atom can they don't know how long it stays up there before it's destroyed itself. There could be carbon atoms at work that were put up there in the 1950s still to this day.
All right, let us, for the sake of discussion, say that CFCs are the culprit. What do we have to look forward to? Are we still venting at a rate that will produce destruction, or have we changed enough, for example, in your business, air conditioning, so that the whole thing is going to get bad, maybe a little worse, and then get better?
Well, what we have to worry about are the third world countries and second world countries who aren't abided by any restrictions the UN may bring about, and strict, definitely the U.S. has the strictest. I don't then any longer. There are people in the business who do. It still goes on, but we have to worry about all these countries coming up that are industrializing, that are still allowed to make the stuff and produce it, and it will be high demand because of the UN restrictions on it. And everybody else is going to do it anyway.
What did they teach you in school about the effects of the thinning ozone? In other words, what does it mean to us?
In a nutshell, it means we're going to get cooked by the sun.
Well, cooked?
Well, if the ozone layer is depleted to the point where it doesn't protect us from the sun's rays, the planet's going to get warmer. If nothing else, skin cancer is going to run rampant. It'll just be a long, slow deterioration of the planet, I believe.
All right. Pat, you're outside. Everybody should know you're outside. I take it you do your business at this time of the morning.
No, actually, I moonlight. I have a newspaper out.
I see.
I'm going to go get it.
Yeah, all right. What percentage of people in your business, since you haven't given your last name, you can surely tell us, in this country, do you think are illegally still venting Freon, CFCs?
At least 20%.
Oh, great.
Like all other things, the federal government doesn't have the money to enforce their laws, and a lot of people know this, and they're just continuing to do it. You can fall within their guidelines and still get away with it. That's definitely possible. Cover your tracks even, you know?
Yes. Why would it be to anybody's advantage to go ahead and vent it instead of, what is done with it? What do you do with it?
Well, we're supposed to suck it out of the equipment with a separate compressor and a portable machine into a drum, and then we turn it in, and it's reclaimed and then recycled and put back up for sale. We don't really get anything for turning it in, though, except the extra time that we get to do it. It takes a lot more time.
Well, why then not? Remember early in our childhoods, Pat, when the landscape was littered with Coke bottles and Pepsi bottles, and they started giving a return, a few cents return. All of a sudden, there were people out there picking this stuff up.
Right.
If they were to offer you some amount of money, some incentive to recycle this stuff, would that change it?
Well, actually, at first they did. They were paying us pennies on the pound for it, but it was something. And now they've had such a low turnover, I guess they're not making money, that they've switched from that and started charging us a handling charge.
Oh, God. So, in other words, there's actually a disincentive then?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Hold on just a moment, Pat. We'll be right back to you. Back now to Pat. Pat, are you there?
Right here.
Okay, I would like to let a couple of people who, you know, whenever we discuss this subject, Pat, I get a lot of very angry faxes saying, oh my God, you bought into this whole UN business about the ozone, and it's such a lie. The American people are being lied to. It's the liberals trying to change our industrial nation into something else. And I'd like to give a couple of those people, if they want to, an opportunity to ask you a question or two or challenge you.
Absolutely. Bring them on.
Bring them on, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks, you know the numbers. Pat is here. He says this is real. Let's do that. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Pat in New Orleans. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Pete Martin.
Okay.
And I have a question.
Yes, sir.
It actually relates to the previous guest.
Well, then,
I'm
sorry, sir. The previous guest is gone.
How did that happen? Because it sounded like he was coming back on again, or in fact, he was holding.
No, he was not holding.
Okay.
All right.
Could I get the phone number for him where I could get his $2, please?
No, he never gave that. He gave an internet address, sir, and that's what you're going to have to use. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Pat in New Orleans. Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling from Montana, listening to you on 1510.
Yes, sir.
And I understand from some scientists and from Scallion Wolf that Pinatubo and other volcanoes are putting so much more stuff into the atmosphere that's detrimental to the ozone layer that what we're doing is just a drop in the bucket.
It's a good point, or a good question, and one that is most frequently raised, Pat. They say, look, CFCs are nothing. Volcanoes are throwing enough up there to do in the ozone.
Well, my reply to that is over 5 years or less, the volcanic fallout is gone from the ozone, and it's able to recover. On the other hand, carbon from the CFCs remains up there indefinitely.
Indefinitely?
They haven't figured out how long it's lasted, and it's a growing problem, so it must be an extended amount of time.
I mean, I struggle with this, Pat, also. When you went to school for all this, and they taught you about all this, how definitive were they in their belief that it was CFCs that were doing the damage?
Well, like I said before, they basically told us we have eliminated all other possibilities. There is nothing else going on in the world that could get that much. They know carbon is the problem, the carbon atom, stealing the oxygen atom from the ozone. But they just will not come out and say that CFC venting is doing it, although the EPA did get pretty hardline about it, and we came under regulation, quite hard regulation, all at once.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Pat in New Orleans. Would have been. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Pat in New Orleans. Hello.
Hey, is this Randy in Oklahoma City?
Yes. Hi, Randy.
Hi. And I work with Ozone at the Oklahoma City Water Treatment Plant, first pilot plant there. But in any case, how the ozone is replenished in the outer atmosphere, it's from the ultraviolet light that creates it. Whenever you run off your, you get at the coffee machine, you'll get that scent. That's ozone scent. And I just want to throw that into you.
All right, so you're saying copying machines and that sort of thing?
Yeah, they do create it, but that won't go to the atmosphere and help build that up because it won't last very long. And the lightning also.
All right, I've heard of projects that actually talk about launching rockets or even launching rockets from high-altitude aircraft to try and replenish the ozone that is in the ozone layer. Have you heard about that, Pat?
Yeah, I did hear something about that.
So maybe we better begin thinking about something like that. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Pat New Orleans. Hi.
Good morning. I'm calling from Houston.
Yes, sir.
My question is this. Is there anything that will correct the fact that the ozone is depleting? Is there anything we can do? Will it ever get done? Or are we just going to head on the same course that we're having where we're just going to deplete it entirely?
That's a tough question for a guy in the air conditioning business.
I can try.
Go ahead, Pat.
If we all stopped today and not another pound was vented into the atmosphere, 10 or 15 years down the road, what we had left might start building back up. But from all evidence I've seen, we're definitely not, as United States citizens and the United States companies will stop, but the second and third world countries won't. They'll grow from it, and we'll die.
Suppose, what did they tell you, Pat, about the complete loss of our ozone layer? Suppose we were to actually lose our ozone layer. It depleted and went away. Could we survive?
I really don't believe we could. Maybe if we went underground, possibly. I don't think we could live underground very long.
Another thing that I've never fully understood, Pat, is the relationship between the depleting ozone layer and general global warming. Is there supposedly a relationship?
There's evidence that points to that. I believe it all ties in, though. I believe the ozone is depleting, and that's causing that, and also the increased seismic activity and everything you talked about tonight, really. It all ties in.
Yeah, I had this funny feeling you might say that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Pat in New Orleans.
Hi, Pat.
How you doing?
Art, both of you. I live at 19 degrees north latitude, about 155 degrees west longitude. There's a volcano out here called Kilauea.
Uh-huh.
And it's been erupting for 14 years. Every day it pumps out over 500 tons of hydrogen sulfide. And when the lava gets down to the ocean, it produces hydrogen chloride. All that stuff is going into the atmosphere over the last, well, since 83. So CFCs, like the previous caller said, drop in a bucket.
So you don't believe the whole thing?
No, and I don't think that CFCs would probably be good for the ozone layer.
You don't realize the amount that are being vented also. Bakeries and big factories sometimes vent thousands and thousands or even hundreds of thousands of pounds a day just because it's cost-effective to them to do that other than shut down and repair the leaks.
Well, the volcano, as I just told you, for the last, since 83, January 3rd, 1983, hundreds of tons a day coming out of Kilauea into the atmosphere.
But how long does that stuff stay up there? That's the question.
Well, it mixes it in. Well, so far today, we've had kind of no winds around the Big Island down here. And we have a phenomenon called VOG. And it's been hanging around, making it makes it look like Los Angeles, unfortunately, until the trade winds come. And we're talking hundreds of times more pollutants into the air from not only from Pinatubo, but there's other volcanoes around the Ring of Fire. There was one that went off down in the South Pacific a couple months ago, making New Island. And there's just plenty of them. CFCs are just, like you say, thousands of pounds. No comparison to hundreds of tons every day.
In other words, okay, well, I appreciate the call, obviously, from the large island of Hawaii. He's saying, in essence, what a lot of conservatives argue, that what man does is just absolutely nothing compared to what Mother Nature is doing. How do you argue with that, Pat?
Well, let me say this. Volcanoes erupt, and most of what comes out of them stays in the lower atmosphere. It doesn't reach the upper ozone and where the ultraviolet rays are constantly building and destroying ozone. The carbon atom actually raises very stably. That's the problem with the freon. It's so stable, it stays together for so long that it finally reaches the upper echelon and finally gets broken apart. All the damage is being done from the outside in by the carbon atoms, whereas everything the planet is doing is happening from the inside out, and most of the effects come back down to the planet rather than go up.
And one might also argue that volcanism has been going on and was, in fact, more active I suppose many years before we ever even thought to measure or even look at the ozone layer. So if that was depleting and killing it, why it ought to be gone by now?
Really?
So listen, Pat, I thank you for joining us. I'm going to run along because I've got a newscast coming up, but I really did want to hear from somebody in the business. You're in the business, and that's your view, and it's funny. I would have thought that somebody in your business would have thought this whole ozone thing was a big conspiracy to cost a lot of people a lot of money and, you know, go to other substances to air condition, and there's a million conspiracy theories out there, but you don't think it's a conspiracy, do you?
Well, at first, most of us did, but once we learned about it and saw the facts and were presented with all the evidence, a lot of us made the decision that it really was the problem. And I don't want to be a part of destroying the ozone layer.
Pat, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. That's Pat. He's in the air conditioning business in the Big Easy, Hoodat country. And I thought I'd bring him on and let him tell you what he thinks. As for me, I just don't know. We'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
I've got another fax here on the ozone, and I'm going to read it to you, and if you want to argue with it, you're welcome to. I don't think I do. I think this business on the ozone is one that I buy into. I do believe the depletion is measurable, has been measured. Some of our best scientists agree that it is occurring. I don't know that it's CFCs, and I can't guarantee it's not volcanoes. I just think that the measurements of the depletion are real, and therefore we as the people who walk around down here need to pay attention to it. And I'll get to the facts in just a moment. It's very interesting. And I also want to mention that our network has made a decision, a very bold decision, to publish some of the most incredible photographs you've ever seen in your whole life. The photographs of the crash debris at Roswell / Socorro. I have no idea what to call it, and I don't know what crash it is. I can tell you this. In the photographs, you will see the I-beams with the glyph inscriptions on them. In the other photograph, you will see the panels from the boxes designed to be used by creatures with six fingers. These will be clear, distinct photographs. They will shock you. They will add to the credibility of the Roswell photographs that we published the previous month. If you order now, and of course we're way ahead on this now, but if you order now, you will indeed get that issue, and you call the same number to get our newsletter, which is presently $29.95 for a year. That price is going up. It's a damn good time to order. The number again, same number, to order a program or to order the newsletter is 1-800-917-4278. All right, here we go. Very quickly, there has been a big, they say, break in Bosnia. The Serbs, in a late-night breakthrough, apparently have agreed to pull their guns back from Sarajevo. They say they can do it in 6 days. We have agreed to a 72-hour cessation in the bombing. Now, if this leads to a comprehensive peace, it was announced that this is what scares the hell out of me, and I've been telling you this right along, but it is now announced that 18,000 American soldiers will be required to go into Bosnia to police the peace. In other words, once we have successfully bombed them into an agreement to divide what used to be Yugoslavia into ethnic areas, 18,000 Americans will be required to go and keep the peace for ever, I guess, because all of history teaches us the moment we leave, the moment the iron fist, whether it's ours, as in NATO's, or the Soviet Union's, which is what used to keep the peace over there, the moment that hand leaves, the ethnic war will begin again. So, to me, it looks as though we are one step closer to solidifying what is going to be absolute madness for America. And I'm sorry to have to tell you. So we may have bombed them into a sort of temporary submission. And then we're going to have to send our men over there to police all this. And we're going to be liked there about as much as the British are liked in Ireland. We are making a terrible, terrible mistake. Now, with regard to what you heard from Australia earlier, and what you heard from not quite a layman, a man in the air conditioning business, about CFCs and the ozone and all the rest of it and the global warming, and Stan talked about the hot spots that he can verify and has verified, and the earth changes coming and all the rest of it. earthquakes in the center of the country yesterday, not big ones. South of Mexico City, a really big one, 7.2 on the Richter scale. You in California know what's been going on in Central California, a rash of small earthquakes. We are, in my opinion, and I'm not a visionary, I'm just a guy who interviews people, some of them strange, some of them believable, some not, but they all seem to point in the same general direction of something building. Whether you want to talk about somebody, the quality of Gordon Michael Scallion, or any of the myriad of other guests that I've had on, don't you feel it? Don't you feel it? I do. We're building towards something. It is, indeed, for the lack of a better word, a quickening, some kind of quickening. And I've been getting faxes all day long on the earthquakes, the hurricanes. Hurricane Marilyn, by the way, now gathering strength and speed, past Barbados and Martinique, headed toward the same poor islands that took a battering last week. We are having one of the worst hurricane seasons in all of recorded history. It may, in fact, be that before it's over. O.J. Simpson, the prosecution is about done. They actually may rest today or Monday at the latest. Yesterday, a prosecution witness took issue with Dr. Henry Lee, well-respected, who presented evidence suggesting there may have been a second killer. He disputes that, said no, these footprints indeed are not footprints, not, but rather the imprint of Ron Goldman's blue jeans. Thought it was rather effective. The defense is, the defense right now is on the ropes, I think. And the defense needs a desperate move. They need a big finish. They are going to have an opportunity. Their case in chief has not been rested. So in other words, they're going to be able to come back and do something. And they better do something. It is said O.J. Simpson is indeed depressed, thinks his chances of an outright acquittal have slipped or are slipping away quickly. There was somebody who faxed us a most intriguing fax yesterday about something O.J. Simpson or the defense team might pull. And here is a follow-up fax. Art, that was an interesting proposition a faxer put forward last night regarding the possibility of O.J. taking the stand, then taking the Fifth Amendment during cross-examination. I ran it by a paralegal friend in Sacramento. And we came up with an interesting scenario. There is a distinct possibility O.J. will take the stand if Judge Ito denies the defense motion to allow testimony from FBI agent Fred Whitehurst. That's another story. After direct examination, O.J. could mouth the exact words proposed by the faxer. In other words, I assert my right to take the Fifth, just like Mark Furman did. Marsha Clark would, of course, go ballistic. Judge Ito would have to tell O.J. he had waived his Fifth Amendment rights and must testify. However, the cat would be out of the bag. The jury would know the truth about Furman. Ito could instruct the jury to disregard the remark, but it would be for naught. O.J. would then be forced to submit to cross-examination, but with an unnerved, off-balance, and largely ineffective Marsha Clark. He might be found in contempt, but the maximum sentence would be 6 months. If he were acquitted on the murder charges, he'd have to be credited for time already served in the county jail. If he continued to refuse to answer questions, he could get 6 months on each count. But he could afford to work in a couple of other items the judges ruled inadmissible without risking additional jail time. One final thought. We've heard O.J. did poorly on mock cross-examination. You've remarked on how Johnny Cochran always seems to know how to push Marsha Clark's buttons to get an emotional reaction. Yeah, he does. Could it be
he's doing this in order to show OJ how to handle her in the event he does need to testify. So I don't know. We talked about welfare. If you've got continuing comments on that, we had a big row about that yesterday, and you're certainly welcome to. The judge in the Oklahoma City bombing case, get this, refused to step down despite requests from both the defense and the prosecution. Instead, he's moved the case to Lawton, Oklahoma. I've got a lot of listeners in Lawton, Oklahoma, and I presume you will keep us very well, indeed, caught up on what's going on in Lawton, Oklahoma. All right, in just one moment, I've got a lot of catch-up to do. We are going to open the phone lines. You know what the numbers are, and we're going to do, for the balance of the morning, two-way talk radio. Don't go away. The balance of the night, ladies and gentlemen, belongs to you. Open lines, wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
My name is Mark. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon.
Hi, Mark.
And I was wondering, I'm going to be moving within the next couple of days down to California, Southern California.
How do you feel about going the other way? I mean, a lot of people are leaving California and going to Oregon, and you're going from Oregon to California.
Well, I'm basically leaving because of some of the... The employment where I'm at right now isn't too great, so I'm probably going to be going down there to look for work, and I heard it's not too bad down there as far as employment.
I've never asked it the other way around, but it might be fun to do. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care, and good luck. Have a good move. You can take us with you. We'll be there. You know, I don't know. I listened to people like Stan from Australia earlier, and I listened to people with respect to the ozone and global warming, and I have this, I know that the temptation for a lot of you is to say it's totally Looney Tunes, and I get faxes saying it is totally Looney Tunes, and I realize that at times a lot of it sounds like it, or the global warming, the volcanic action, the earth movement we're getting, the apparent warming of the ocean. Stan made a lot of reference to that. The larger hurricane seasons, the disruptions we're going through, and I must tell you that I don't buy into it totally. But I do have a nagging feeling inside that something's coming. Something evil comes this way. Something is going to happen, and I can't shake it. I just can't shake it. Whether it's Scallion or any of the rest of them, they're all pointing the same way, and there's got to be some sort of collective wisdom in that, or not. But I've got a lousy little feeling the answer is yes. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art. This is Dave in Sarasota, Florida.
Hello, Dave.
How are you?
Fine.
I listen to your program just about every day, or every night, I mean. And one of the things, or what we hear a lot about, is the quickening.
Yes.
And I, like you, believe there's something happening.
There is.
But I also believe that the world probably needs a sign of something good happening. Okay?
That'd be nice.
What would you think, and this is a what if there was a new substance developed that cured all the major diseases out there and conditions, what do you think that would do for the world?
Alleviate a lot of human suffering.
I think it would also give a lot of hope.
I agree.
And I think the children...
there are a lot of what ifs. I mean, are you suggesting there is such a thing?
Yeah, I'd like to fax you some information.
By all means.
Okay.
I'm open to anything.
Okay, I know.
I get shot full of holes for it, but I'm open to anything. I'll listen to anything. So, yeah, fax me, write me, whatever you want to do.
Okay, what's the fax?
Area code 702 727-8499. Now, you've got to limit it to three pages, otherwise my fax machine
will not spit it out. It goes in. It goes into memory first. So limit it to 3 pages.
Okay, thank you.
You would please. Thank you very much for the call. All right, here's the facts I was telling you about. Dear Art, I hope I can write this without sounding too technical. Please accept my apologies for the terms and descriptions. I am a chemistry and biology scholar, and I'd like to clear up some gross discrepancies and untruths being told. The ozone layer is millimeters thick and tens of thousands of feet up. Most compounds and gases cannot reach that high. Only aromatic compounds like chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, can rise to such a great height. Global wind patterns are a bit more complex than that as well. We cannot replenish the ozone layer due to the thin nature and unstable compound composition. The artificially added ozone would not remain stable. Once the CFC reaches a height where UV rays can strike or affect it, ultraviolet rays energize it and turn it into an aromatic organoacid. One chlorine atom or more is freed from the molecule, and the unstable ozone molecules in the ozone layer are more likely to reattach themselves to the CFC radical molecule. Once the CFC radical binds to the single oxygen atom, that ozone molecule is considered depleted. What is left is O2, which cannot remake ozone by itself. Volcanoes do not deplete the ozone layer. They cannot create gases or compounds which reach the ozone layer, and even if they did, they would not deplete ozone. At the most, carbon dioxide from volcanoes would contribute to global warming, but that is a completely separate issue from ozone depletion. We can live in a warmer climate. We cannot live if our flesh is killed by UV rays or if our animals and ecosystems are mutated beyond viability. That's from Columbia, Missouri. Thank you. And again, I don't know whether I buy into it or not. I'm not a scientist. I could not have done what this gentleman just did by facts. I don't have the knowledge to do that. I simply continue to research and look into this whole business about ozone and global warming, which he suggests is a separate issue, and I'm watching our ecosystem. And I have sort of a collective feeling that we're headed in a difficult direction, and that's pulling my word punches. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, sorry. Let me shut off my radio.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Art, why don't you get some like high school kid to answer your phones for you? I mean, you're making like $20 billion off all that nonsense you're selling.
No, I'm not.
For God's sakes.
No,
I mean, you live in a trailer. You drive around a Geo Metro. I mean, for heaven's sakes, already. Yeah, and what happened with Cal Ripken? How come you didn't bring him up at all?
Cal Ripken?
Yes, Cal Ripken Jr., the Iron Horse.
Yes?
I don't hear you mention maybe the greatest feat in baseball history. I don't hear you bring that up.
That's because I'm bored by baseball. I think baseball is boring as hell.
Oh, but having some lunatic on from Australia telling you about the Martians and stuff, that's real interesting.
I don't think he mentioned Martians.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's the same old thing, you know, every time with...
That was intelligent. That was very intelligent. Now, I lay out open lines, and if you want to call up and act like that guy did, you can do it. I'll put you on the air. That's what this show is all about. When it's open lines, it's open lines. And what is fascinating to one person, Cal Ripken or whatever it is not another's cup of tea. And so I will accept the criticism, and I will also continue to do as I have done, and I will continue to present, I will continue to present you with things that may challenge you, may make you angry, may make you sound like that last caller. I don't know. But I will continue to try and challenge you. and I'm going to challenge you with things that you will not hear elsewhere. And if I take shots for that from this guy or anybody else, well, that's all right. That's what I'm here for. I'm like a big old pincushion. It's okay. I'll live through it. As for the rest of it, I'm not so sure about that. All right, we're going to pause here at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the largest live overnight talk show in America, Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Good to be here. Great to be here, actually. It's a beautiful night in the desert, and I hope where you are as well. We know it was beautiful in Perth, Australia. Oh, my. Sometimes I don't believe myself. I'm actually most times willing to do about anything on the radio, anything that's different. I like difference. And the ratings of this program and the reach of this program and the interest in this program prove that the audience does as well. Unscreened, basically uncensored calls, with the exception, of course, of last names and things that could be litigated and stuff like that we don't put on the air. But otherwise, uncensored, unscreened, just open lines. When will the world learn that is the most interesting kind of talk radio? I don't know. I did a whole chapter of it in my new book. And I bet Sandy down in San Diego is going to be one of the first to order. Sandy, I'll send you a personally autographed version. There you go, Sandy. You've got your response. Back to the lines. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Charlie, California. Hey.
Hello.
The guy you had on earlier, the Australian guy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, guys like that really make me sick.
I know.
I understand where these guys are coming from. If you want to sell books, you want to be known, you can't get on the radio and say, you know.
You know what? He wasn't pumping his book at all. As a matter of fact, he didn't. Let me tell you, Charlie. No, let me tell you so that you really do understand. He didn't give out any address to buy any of his books. He didn't give out any numbers. He didn't even know he was going to go on the air.
Wait a minute, until I called him.
He sent me email. He didn't ask to be a guest. I thought he was interesting, and so I put him on.
Well, let me take all that back. Let me just say that these guys who constantly talk about how terrible the future is going to be, I think that they unnecessarily alarm people. You know, certainly we are faced with dramatic environmental problems, and most of them are caused by man himself. But these are problems that we can deal with if we choose to deal with them, and we still have time to do that.
Charlie, we can deal with what we can control.
That's absolutely true. But there are no environmental problems that are going to cause mass extinction, massive loss of life. I don't believe that. And for people who come on the radio and say that thing, they're absolutely absurd. And I'll tell you something.
Well, it is anybody who does not believe that massive Earth movement is possible.
Now, massive Earth movement is absolutely possible.
Yes,
and
it is.
It's constant. It's been constant for years. But certainly, if you look at the deaths that have occurred, you haven't had like losses of hundreds of thousands of people in one year. You've had thousands. But I think the thing is this: I envy any child born right now who will live well into the next century. If you look at the things that we've done in this century, going from creating planes to creating vehicles.
Oh, it's amazing.
It is absolutely incredible.
It is.
And I think that in the next century, you are going to see things that will be beyond belief. And I think we have challenges, but I think we're capable of overcoming those challenges. And it just, all of these guys who are down on man, yes, we're capable of doing terrible things, but the reverse is true also. We are capable of doing great things. And I think that we tend to forget that.
I have a question for you. It is a political question, so you should enjoy it. Is what NATO is doing right now in Bosnia, in your mind, a great thing?
I think that what you're seeing after the Soviet Union collapsed is you're seeing nations finally coming together and realizing, and yeah, NATO's young and it's making a lot of stupid mistakes, and but it's learning. And I think that 20, 30 years from now, no, you're not going to have this conspiracy world government, but I think you're going to have governments around the world realize that we need at places to work together. And I think that in the long run, countries working together is positive, not negative. And these conspiracy nuts who say that countries should work independently, we've tried that. And I think working together is a positive thing.
We're not against working together. I'm asking you whether NATO or sending 18,000 American troops into Bosnia to police an ethnically, geographically separated, enforced peace is a good idea.
Might not be a good idea, but I think these people constantly criticize NATO. You know something? You're seeing some tremendously horrible things happening there, and I tell you this, at least these people are trying, and I'll tell you what, why weren't we doing that in 1945, in the 1940s when Hitler was butchering all these Jews?
Of course, we did finally enter the fray, as you well know, Charles.
Yeah, but it took a bomb being dropped on us to do that, and I think the world philosophy is changing, and I think that's good.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. I think what we're about to do in Bosnia is tragically, profoundly wrong. I do think that we are probably capable of bombing them to the table. We've done that. We're probably capable of enforcing a peace, making them all sit down and sign a peace agreement. And then we're going to march 18,000 of our people into that country to enforce it, to keep it. And it's going to be the sorriest damn thing we've ever done. It's going to be like, I won't use that analogy. I'm just telling you that it's not going to work, in my opinion. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you.
This is Bob from San Diego.
Hi, Bob.
And I had a few topics I want to talk to you about.
Yes?
I want to say the best two for last. So first I bring up President Clinton.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you notice, since the... his campaign, when he was, before he was first elected and everything, till now, I mean, this guy's nose is getting bigger.
Yep.
I mean, that'd be something to put in the newsletter. You know, you take pictures of him as he went along.
Well, by the end of his second term, he's going to need wheels out on the end of it.
Yeah, if you put in your newsletter,
like a B-52.
Every year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a Pinocchio theory or maybe he's a chronic alky, because that... booze is the only thing he hasn't downed since he's been in there, you know. Everything else, he has.
Maybe.
Not booze.
I wouldn't know that.
Well, tobacco, firearms, alcohol, he hasn't downed at all.
Well, I wouldn't know.
Well, I wouldn't know for sure, but, I mean, we know the main things that he did.
All right.
I'll get him out of the way. Okay, the second thing about the alien things, you know, that's really intriguing.
Yes.
And, they're talking about those boxes they had.
Yes.
And I've been thinking about it, you know, even before I found out that they had the six-finger
stains on them.
Yes.
And I was thinking, you think maybe that could be something like maybe, since they didn't have no, like, genitalia, you know, noticeable anyway. I mean, you think maybe they had, like, a, some kind of, that was some kind of life pod for, like, a fetus? For, like,
how would
maybe they're doing, like, some kind of test tube thing.
Yeah, I understand where you're going, but I think you're going around the bend there. It could be anything. What do I know? All I know is, this alien autopsy film, for all the screeching and screaming that I've heard about how silly it is, there has not been one serious hole shot in the whole thing yet. Not one. And I think Bob Shell came on here and added a lot of credibility to it. And the photographs that we're about to publish definitely do. You can talk about mutations and genetic mutation and why that poor being who's really just a human being, you can talk about that all you want. But when you see the next photographs that we're going to publish, the ones with the panels from the boxes designed for six fingers, if you don't sit there and give some serious thought to the possibility that what you're seeing is as real as can be, then you're just simply not an open-minded person at all, or you have another agenda. This clearly, with the evidence we have so far, is either proof of an alien visit, which is not exactly a minor story, or the most involved, complex, long-term hoax that's ever been pulled off, period. Either way, I calculate it to be a very large story, and I lean toward authenticity. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
All right.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, listen, will you forgive me? I was supposed to use the new caller line, but I'm at work where I didn't want to put it on their bill.
Well, that's fine.
Oh, good. I just wanted to compliment you. I haven't called a talk show in 15, 16 years, and I know you hear this a lot, but I really think you're, if I may use an analogy, like actors, of which there's only been three or four that are, they call them a man's man, meaning that both female and males like them equally, and they say that's kind of the test whether you're, I'm more nervous than I thought I would be here. But I just really think that there's a spirit to your show that is much greater even than the apparent content, which is really good. I really haven't called a talk show in about 16 years, and I did a little teeny talk show once that was really silly, but you've helped me there too because I've been doing respiratory therapy for about 16 years. And This was following Ted Kimball, who built the audience up for me. It was just a fluky little thing in Salt Lake. He was the partner to Herb Jepko.
Oh,
and he
Herb
built up a huge audience of geriatrics and everybody else. But I maintained that audience for a short while and had practically a 40 rating. But that sounds like Braggadocio show. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I am listening. I think you're wonderful. And I hope you won't get discouraged because there's nothing like this anywhere. And I listen to it addictively every night. And that's all I wanted to tell you.
Thank you, my friend. That's why I'm doing it. That's why I'm doing it, because there really is nothing else like it. There's room for all kinds of talk radio in the spectrum. And some nights we'll probably sound like other talk radio. Last night we did. Talked about welfare all night. Tonight we don't. Tomorrow night I have no idea what we do. You know what we might do tomorrow night? We might do Truth or Trash again. Would you like that? Sure got an awful lot of requests for it. I don't want to do the same thing. I'm not going to do the same thing. And so inevitably, some nights you're going to really like me and some nights you're going to hate me because some nights you'll like what I'm doing and some nights you won't. I'm not going to do the same thing repetitively as so many others are doing. I don't denigrate them for it. I think they're going to be sorry. I think talk radio in general is going to be sorry if it goes marching down a singular path. It needs to be more varied. And so I'll continue to supply that variation. And judging from ratings, judging from the amount of people listening and the growth of the program, it's popular. Increasingly popular as more and more people discover it. I'm very thankful for that. We'll be right back. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
the ozone problem. There's a lot of facts they don't tell you. And if you know them and you got common sense, you can figure it out. I disagree with a lot of these people, even that facts you read. Ozone has a half-life of 45 minutes. It's being created all the time by the sun and oxygen. The reason we have the ozone over the North Pole, you lived in Alaska, isn't it dark quite a few months of the year there?
Absolutely.
The sun doesn't create the ozone there.
And then alternatively, light during the other half.
Right, and then the ozone hole is smaller. It's larger in the winter.
Well, okay. Yes, arguably, the ozone hole gets larger and smaller. It is true.
And?
But since we have been measuring it, it has been increasing in size. And the present measurements show it to be roughly the size of Europe over the Antarctic, which is big, the biggest ever measured. And there is a verifiable, U.S. satellite verifiable 10% reduction over our heads. Now, that's not imagined, that's real.
It's not the fluorocarbons, though.
Well, you can argue that. That's fine. I don't know what it is myself.
Well, let me tell you something.
What do you think it is?
It's a depletion of oxygen. It's in direct correlation with the oxygen depletion on the Earth, the green. We're losing the green belts.
Okay.
All right. And there's no way the fluorocarbons are going to get up there. They may say they're there. I'd like for them to go up there and bring some back and show them, but I wouldn't believe them anyway because carbon's heavier than air. How would it get up there?
Well, do you agree that there is a reduction in progress?
In progress?
In progress.
Yes, and I wouldn't say that it hasn't happened before and it won't happen 100 times more. It's a natural cycle of the Earth.
Well, I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
Well, I'd like to have somebody come up with some facts instead of, I don't know. But
well, you know what the problem is, though, sir? The scientists, the people that have sure much more knowledge than I do and study this, are arguing with each other about it. So, you know, who are you and I?
Let me drop one thing in here before I leave, Art.
Sure.
It's kind of strange that Dow Chemical's patents up on this. In the last five, six years, we've been hearing about this ozone depletion.
In other words, time to pick up a patent on some other substance that you can then make money on.
And do away with everything that you made money on so nobody else can do it.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Thank you. He's trying to lay a foundation. I watch too much OJ. Trying to lay a foundation that it is a financial matter, that the company that had the patent on Freon, I guess, now would lose it and other people would produce it, and so it's the conspiracy theory, the economic conspiracy theory, and it's, you know, it's, I suppose, as good as anybody else's theory, but that's all it is. And again, I say, and I get faxes on both sides of this question and lots of information, but the scientists are arguing with each other about this. What's causing it? Not so much the fact that it actually is measurably less, but what's causing it? Either way, it would seem to have possible dire consequences for us if the process continues. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, I'm Lee Grandma Radio.
All right. Grab it. And when you do, turn it off.
Well, this is Samson listening to you. Well, I guess on Como here in Las Vegas.
K-O-M-O?
Yeah, well, K-E-V-G doesn't carry your last hour, so.
That's right.
So we have to really search.
Yes, sir.
But, I'm on IRC channel, #Art, -Bell, so we're just saying hi to you this evening. You know, I couldn't believe that guy you had on, talking about, what is he, an air conditioner repairman?
Yep.
He
owns an air conditioning company.
Oh, whatever. Well, I mean, you should have stopped and asked him to give you one example of this global warming. I mean, I imagine he would have been really hard-pressed to come up with something.
Well, he didn't talk much about global warming. The most he said, as I recall, is that he thought there might be a connection. I know a lot of people dispute that, but there are others with more scientific prowess than I've got, and maybe even you, who think there is a connection. So I'm darned if I know.
Well, the bottom line is, if you raise I think if you raise the global degree by one, if you raise it by even 1 degree, the flooding would be so, you know, millions would die. I mean,
so it's important. In other words, if there is actually a warming going on, it's a non-trivial matter, correct?
The evidence for it isn't there. That's my point.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I'm thinking this thing has gone the gamut. It's gone from global cooling to global warming, and, you know, and who's making money off the agenda? I was talking with a guy once who's stationed up in the Arctic, and his job was to meter this depletion, you know, for this very thing. I don't know if he worked for the government or if it was a private agency or what.
Right.
But, he told me flat out, he said, you know, this is a bunch of bunk. This whole...
A lot of people believe that.
Well, I mean, no, but this is a guy that's in the know.
And maybe the guy you know who's in the know is absolutely right. Maybe it is a bunch of bunk.
Well, I'm beginning to believe it is, isn't it? You know, I think there's too much scaring of the masses and then profiting from
the threat. You know? All right, sir, I've got to leave it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. I appreciate your call, and I don't necessarily disagree with you. I'm just not sure. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 14th, 1995. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 14th, 1995.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. Here's a nice fact. Here I am. I wanted to let you know, I plan to, or at least I am hopeful to get one of your autographed books. I have already gone to the 24-hour post office and expressed my order to Paper Chase Press. I can't wait. I hope this doesn't signify the quickening that I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, drive 20 miles to order your book. I love the show, you're the greatest, blah, blah, Brett, in Utah. That's really nice, Brett, thank you. That probably is the quickening, that you run out in the middle of the night to do that. I'll do it one more time. I'll give you the address. This is a one-time offer, and it's for the first 1,000 books ordered. There'll be autographed copies. That's it. 1,000 in one, forget it. Therefore, you should act fairly quickly. It is Paper Chase Press, the address. The price of the book is $24.95 plus $4 shipping and handling, a total of $28.95, $28.95. First 1,000 get the autographed copies. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Howdy, Art. It's Sheet in San Francisco.
How you doing?
I just got off the FM band. You were on the radio tonight in other areas besides when you're on live. It's pretty amazing. You're just nationwide news. KPFA is a station in Berkeley, and they have a program running for many years called Over the Edge. It's run by guys who are part of a kind of a radio troupe performance band called Negative Lamp.
You know what? I've heard about this.
Right. Those are the guys that did the hoax a few years ago when they ran a story that some kid in Minnesota had hacked up his parents with an axe while listening to one of their songs, and got Rolling Stone and all these major mass media to believe it.
Well, are these the people that are running some of my show, or what are they doing?
Right, well, what they did tonight was on the alien autopsy. It was called Autopsy Part 1, 3.5 hours, and I only caught the last hour. What they did is take all kind of major mass media about the autopsy. You see clips of you interviewing Santilli on the air.
Right.
Clips of you with Bob Schell, and the guy calls in and says, "Marsh, remember that guy? Martians, you guys are crazy. Why don't you grow up?" And yeah, it was that repeating again and again. And
yeah.
Stuff from the actual show and stuff that was on other radio stations that I don't know the source of, and kind of multiple sources kind of going at once and different elements repeating and so on and so forth to kind of hash out the reality of it, the mythology around it, and so forth. You were a big part of it, and it was kind of interesting to just kind of tune away from you for a minute, go to KPFA, and there you were again. You know, it was like I didn't even miss you or something. So,
they're a bunch of pirates.
That's right. Sue them, the copyright, right? No, well, we've got to get the information out there, and those guys have been on the air for many years.
Yeah, I know they've been doing it. I've heard about it from other sources, so I'm kind of glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I'll get through and talk to you and just tell you about that. And, nothing really else to say except that you're doing a great job, and it's really you're, I think, the guy that I guess he was calling in, wanted to call in the first time line, but made a mistake, called West of the Rockies. He was saying that, you do something really special, and that's really a lot different from a lot of what's out there. And as a media junkie, I work in politics in California and exposed to a lot of major mass media and minor mass media every day. And you really do something that's really kind of promotes more of a pure expression of a free exchange of ideas on the radio in real time, in this time right now. And
thank,
that's really
thank you,
appreciatable.
Michael. Thank you. Thank you. That is exactly what I'm trying to do. And I'm glad that it's greeted so well. You know, it makes some people angry, but that's cool too. I'm trying to be different. I want to be different, and I couldn't do this 5 hours a night if it wasn't different. If I had to come up here 5 hours a night and limbaugh you to death, you know, with just raging about the liberals, or raging about politics, I would eventually get bored and I couldn't do it anymore. So I'm liable to do anything on any given night. I might even be considered about halfway crazy. And I know there's lots of you out there who think I am. But it sure does make for fun radio and spontaneous radio. There's a good word for it, spontaneous. Radio should not be boringly predictable. And I shall not have it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, For the People member, Aurora, Colorado.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Art, I agree with you on Bosnia, but I remember when we started this bombing, they say...
By the way, when you're a member of For the People...
Yes.
Do you carry a card?
Well, I made my own. They don't really issue one, but...
Oh, you're kidding. You had to make your own card?
Yes.
So you're a card-carrying member, but you had to make your own card. All right, well.
About a week ago when NATO, or more correctly...
Wait. I have one other question.
Certainly.
For you, and then we'll get to that.
Okay.
If you're not a member of For the People, does that mean you're against the people?
I guess it could be construed that way.
Oh, God. All right, well, anyway, what about...
Now, when we started this, you had said that you were generally in agreement with that action, and I agree with the opinion you've expressed the last couple nights.
I was in agreement with, in other words, if we could get a bomb about Sarajevo and get that kind of thing stopped, fine. But then to back it up, make them sign a peace agreement and send in 18,000 Americans, I'm sorry, no way.
Yeah, it's absolutely foolish. It's going to be a quagmire.
Oh, yeah.
And not only are we looking at American kids dying over there for people who are bound and determined to decimate each other and have been for centuries.
You know what, sir? I do have a heart, and I'm subject to seeing, the mortar round landing in the middle of the shopping area in Sarajevo and saying, God, this is awful.
Of course.
And so I feel it like everybody else does, but I guess a couple of weeks ago I began to think of this, step back from it a little bit, and I began to consider what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're taking these people who are bound and determined to kill each other, genocide, and we're bombing them to submission. We can do that. We have that power, and we may be on the verge of having done it. And then we're going to have to go in there and enforce this ethnic geographic separation for as long as we want the fighting to stop. And the minute we leave, it will begin again.
Absolutely. It's inevitable, Art. And, not only are we facing that, but I think that, we've made lifelong enemies out of the Serbs now. They have very long memories about that sort of thing.
Yep.
And I think they could, they certainly don't have an air force to use against us, but I think they could quite conceivably send a different type of bomber over here.
Well, there is terrorism.
Yes.
I know, and I can't find the upside to it.
No, there is none. It's a feel-good measure, I think, and I'm not trying to belittle people who really feel a compassionate need to intervene in this. I understand the way they feel. I really do, but you laid it out beautifully as to what's going to happen logically. We're going to have to stay there forever if we want the fighting to stop.
Yeah.
And even then it won't stop.
Yeah. Well, I think eventually we'll be regarded about as the English are in Ireland.
Well, obviously, we will be hated. We're already hated around the world to a large extent. Some of it, good cause. But it's an absolute no-win situation, and no American should die over there.
Well, I'm with you there. I've got to run, sir. Thank you, and good night. I think a lot of Americans are going to be asking themselves, as their offspring go off to police the peace in a very dangerous place, how much business we have doing this. And we are now guaranteeing 18,000 troops to go in if they manage to get this peace thing on. It's really insanity. It's insanity when you step back and you look at it. I suppose some steps from a humanitarian point of view, are justified, but this the larger question and the years ahead are going to be a terror if we proceed as we appear to be right now. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. Where are you?
Fury Heights, WTAV.
Yes, ma'am.
First I want to say the flowers are gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely fresh flowers?
Yeah.
Of course they are.
Well, this is my second try at them. I ordered them from my mother back in, I don't remember if it was Valentine's Day or Mother's Day. And she is now in a nursing home with Alzheimer's.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so yesterday would have been hers and my father's 65th wedding anniversary. So I decided to send some flowers. Just, love you. And I instructed the nurses that I wanted one bouquet to go into her room, one bouquet to go into the nurse's station,
mm-hmm.
and one bouquet to go into the solarium.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called yesterday afternoon to check and see that they got there,
right.
And they had.
Right.
That was Wednesday afternoon. And then talked to a nurse this morning who was hadn't been there yesterday. She said, I walked in, and she says, I could smell those flowers 20 feet before I ever got to the nurse's station.
I know. Yeah, it really is everything we say it is, ma'am.
Oh, I know. They are gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Oh, and I had a remark for the gentleman who talks about Cal Ripken.
Oh, yes, yeah, so.
I am not a baseball, football, any sports fan.
Mm.
And maybe, Cal Ripken maybe did an amazing feat. But I've been at my job for 44 years. And I haven't missed a day of being a wife, a mother, a doctor, a nurse, a cook, a cleaning woman, you name it. I've been doing it.
And I'll just bet nobody's giving you a 20-minute standing ovation.
No, I mean, my kids have once in a while clapped when they...
I mean, I don't want to... Thank you. First of all, thank you for the commercial. I've got to run. Thank you for the commercial. It's better than I could have said it. Look, I don't begrudge Cal Ripken. I'm just not a baseball fan, that's all. And his attendance is laudable. And the worship he got from his fans is fine. It's okay. It's just not something that flips my switch, I guess. So I in no way denigrate Cal Ripken. Congratulations, Cal Ripken. Now maybe that guy will be happy. I doubt it, though. Wild Card Line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art. I'm calling from Houston.
Hello.
So I have no idea what y'all are talking about, but I do have a question for you.
All right.
The alien autopsy?
Yes, sir.
If you take a look at that brain, you know, it sounds awful ridiculous to me, but it kind of looks like a skinned chicken, doesn't it? If you take a look at it, if you get a chance. It really does.
Look, I've got a very good copy. When that ran, I got my copy directly off satellite.
Uh-huh.
And it's excellent. And I couldn't say that it looked like a skinned chicken.
It does to me. It just looks like those are the legs that are there. I don't know. It just looks like
you even see chicken legs, huh? I think it's like a Rorschach test, you know? We all see what we're going to see in it.
I want to ask you something else. Any kind of question, right?
You go to a psychiatrist, you hold up a little thing. What is this? Oh, alien brain.
Alien brain. It's a chicken. Favorite football team, Art?
Well, you know, I wish you wouldn't ask that. I'm now torn. I have always favored the San Diego Chargers.
Okay, I like that.
However, since the Raiders went back to Oakland, they used to be my favorite, and so I'm torn. I like San Diego and I like Oakland.
Toughest quarterback you ever saw?
Toughest or best?
Toughest and best.
Well, I don't think that's a good question with regard to quarterbacks. I think just best, and I think the answer is Joe Montana.
I agree. Thank you, Art.
You're welcome, sir. Have a good morning. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello.
The Italian Stallion, Portland.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to know a couple things.
All right.
Okay, you know when you get bigger, more networks or like more radio stations?
Yes.
Does that mean that you add more commercials? How does that work?
Well, no. Well, yes. No. The answer is yes and no. In other words, the more affiliates you have, there's kind of a middle territory. The more affiliates you have, then the greater an ad rate you can charge for those people that advertise, right? Because you're reaching a bigger audience.
I see. And I think you're really great. I've been listening to you many years, but, you know, I mean, and I think, you know, you're doing a really great job and everything, but...
But we have more commercials.
Number one, though, I think the commercials are just getting to the point where we're only hearing about 15 minutes of you and the rest commercials, you know, I mean, that's...
Well, it's not... What I did this morning was I spread the commercials... I spread the commercials from the beginning of the show because I had, you know, I mean, I was sitting talking to a guy in Australia forever.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I see what you're saying.
I pushed some from the front toward the rear.
Uh-huh.
Now, as the network continues to grow, you actually soon will begin to hear possibly fewer commercials.
Oh, I see.
Because the ad rate will go up, and so the income derived will mean we don't have to run as many.
Okay, another thing real quick. I think that we should be the police of the world. And
why?
You probably want to know why.
Right.
Because, one thing, America consists with Russians, Italians, Chinese. We should be the police of the world because we have all the people here in this country. And therefore, I mean, anywhere in the place in the world...
Okay, let me stop you. Now, you say because we are diversified ethnically, we should police the world. That's what you're really saying, right?
Exactly, because we have all the people.
Stop.
Okay.
Wait. Then how can you justify going over to what used to be Yugoslavia and enforcing an ethnic separation?
because it could spread to Europe, or, you know, and everywhere else, because, you know, I have a lot of relatives in Europe and in Italy. I would hate to
but you're have saying,
that spread out.
Yeah, but you're saying that people with ethnic diversity should enforce ethnic separation elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, but we have people that are from Croatia and Serbia here. I mean, would you? Those people are concerned about their relatives over there.
All right, sir. I know. I appreciate your call. I was trying to get you. In other words, you came at me by saying, because we have ethnic diversity here, that we should police in the rest of the world. And the kind of policing we're talking about doing right now in what used to be Yugoslavia, is enforcing ethnic separation. The total antithesis of what this country is supposed to be. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi Art, this is Bob in Mississippi.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, listen, I kind of heard as it faded out on San Antonio station there that you had a new affiliate starting up in Mobile or somewhere in Alabama.
I do, yes.
Can you give me the number on that?
I don't know what I've done with the sheet. If you will listen tomorrow morning, I would be happy. I'm looking for it like crazy. If you'll listen, I've got a million faxes here. I'm sorry. It's lost in the pile. If you listen tomorrow morning, I'll get it on the air for you.
Okay. The 710 or 1110 sound familiar? I guess that's all right.
I'm sorry.
I understand. Listen, killer show tonight. I had to stay up all night.
Thanks for the call.
To it.
All right, sir. Thank you. And listen tomorrow, and I'll get that on the air for you. I will retrieve it. You guys have no idea. My room, by the end of the night, looks like a cyclone hit it. I mean, I've got paper everywhere. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
I was just going to respond to Charlie's comment about there not being tens of thousands who have died in this century from natural disasters. If he would check the World Almanac, he would find that in 1931, a flood in China took 3,700,000. Another flood in China took 200,000. A cyclone in Bangladesh took 300,000. That was in 1970.
Yes, there have been many, many natural disasters.
In 1991, there was another one that took 139,000.
Right.
And a couple of earthquakes. One in Japan in 1923 took 200,000.
These are all things worth noting, and because we are America, because we're a nice, modern, industrial nation, we should not think that we are immune to those kind of natural disasters.
No, we can think of ourselves as very lucky.
So far, yeah.
But there have just been millions who have died in this century from natural disasters. I just happened to pick out some of the big ones.
You did very well.
And I just thought if Charlie wants to check it out, he can pull out the World Almanac and look at it himself.
All right. Well, listen, time has evaporated, so tonight you're the lucky one. You get to say goodnight, America.
Goodnight, America, and I love you.
That was nice. Now, see, there's a nice way to end it. Thank you all. It has been a pleasure. It was a pleasure being able to announce my book on the way. God, I'm so excited about that. 1,000, that's it. 1,000 autographed versions. And so from the high desert, good night, America.